are. You're on.
Good morning. Mr. Brabeck, would you close the outside back door so we don't get any patio noise? That's what happens when you're the last one in. Again, good morning. Welcome to the final of 3 days of our budget session. It's also the last day of spring. We're going to do something different today because it's a real pleasure. I'm going to ask retired Ranger Army Colonel Jack Jones, also retired from Cal Poly, a great friend, one of my personal heroes sitting in the front row here, to step up to the podium. And Mr. Jones, you, sir, will lead us in the flag salute.
We all stand, please, and face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Colonel. Madam Clerk, would you need to read any last-minute changes, deletions, additions?
You have no changes to today's agenda that I'm aware of, and your next item is the budget item on contributions to outside agencies.
Ms. Wilcox, are you going to lead off on that?
That was a wonderful introduction. I was just going to do a brief overview of the action taken by the board yesterday. Changes to the proposed budget, there were four. The board approved the reduction of $9.25 million from the tax reduction reserve to be appropriated as a loan to the airport for construction of a parking structure. The board approved a capital project for the garage in the amount of $80,000 to expand office space. The cost of this project is to be charged to county departments. And the board amended the position allocation list for Fund Center 407, the garage, to add one equipment mechanic and cost of about $67,000. That's the 10-month cost. The annualized cost of the equipment mechanic is about $85,000. The cost of this position is also to be charged to county departments. And lastly, the board directed the Parks Department to return on September 25th with an update on the maintenance of the trails issues. And those are the changes made by the board yesterday. So with that, we're going to go right into contributions to public agencies. I don't know if you wanted to, where's Nikki, if you wanted to get the overview from staff first or take public comment.
Why don't we start with overview from staff? And Nikki, are you going to start off or? Did you want Dan to help turn those pages for you?
Pardon me?
Did you want Dan to help turn the pages for you? He looks like he's a little bored in the front row.
My pages are already torn out, so that's it. I've used them so much lately. Good morning. I'm Nikki Schmidt of the County Administrative Office. Essentially, the budget for contributions to other agency Fund Center 106 is status quo, with a slight decrease in funding recommended due to some reallocation of projects to other fund centers. The District Community Project Grant Program provides discretionary monies for each supervisors for projects and programs that aren't typically health and human services related. In fiscal year 06-07, 78% of this program's funds were expended. This equates to 89 projects for 77 nonprofit organizations, totaling $134,000 in grants that your board has granted. The 07-08 budget recommends a 4.15 CPI increase in district discretionary funding from $25,000 to $26,038. And as always, funds remaining from 06-07 will be carried forward to the new fiscal year. The community-based organization Preventive Health Grant Review Committee is made up of representatives from the Adult Policy Council, Mental Health Advisory Board, Drug and Alcohol Board, Health Commission, and the Children's Services Network. And the only person I see in the audience is Jill. So if Jill could stand up. Am I missing? I don't recognize him. Jill is the representative from the Children's Services Network. The committee reviewed a total of 57 projects from 53 nonprofit organizations with a total funding request of $1.28 million. Proposals were reviewed and prioritized with emphasis placed on an organization's ability to leverage the grant funds, requirement to obtain a public match, prior year, year-to-date, and proposed performance measures, results, and outcomes, population served, community need, distribution of services provided, and project sustainability with funds granted. And also, duplication of services was taken into account. The committee also did random program site visits. Funding for the community-based organizations is recommended in the amount of $367,750 and will be used for health and human services programs that are not normally provided by county departments. For many of these organizations, the county grant also serves as the public match requirement for other grants. 32 projects are recommended for funding. Funding for preventive health grants is recommended in the amount of $420,000 and will be used for programs and services that promote and encourage healthy behaviors, lifestyle changes, and activities. 20 projects are recommended for funding. As a reminder to your board, funding for preventive health grants is based on the provisions of Measure A, which requires 15% of the county's tobacco settlement money to be allocated for this program. No new projects were recommended under the other agency request category. AGP Video and KCBX funding is recommended to be transferred to Fund Center 100 Board of Supervisors budget. The San Luis Obispo County Historical Society funding and contract oversight responsibility is recommended to be transferred to Fund Center 113 General Services. And the county is in the second year of a two-year commitment for the Children's Assessment Center, also known as Martha's Place, through the Economic Opportunity Commission. It is recommended that the EOC receive annual distributions of the county's tobacco settlement endowment at the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation after the county's two-year commitment expires. In addition, it is recommended that projects that are normally considered under other agency requests, other than those that are mandated, be reviewed and funding recommendations be made in the same manner as the CBO preventive health grants. We already have an established committee, and so it is our intent to maybe to work with them to develop program criteria and then release requests for proposals at the same time as the RFPs are released for the CBO and preventive health grants, which is in December. We once again request that the signing authority be given to the county administrator to sign agreements for grants $50,000 or under. For grants over $50,000, of which there are only four of them, those agreements will be brought back to your board for approval. And I'm available for any questions, and thank you.
Before you sit down, Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, just a comment, Nikki. I know how much work you and your committee put into this process. The grant applications are rather extensive, and I know you all spend a tremendous amount of time going through it. And I want to point out, too, that since Nikki has been doing this for a number of years, she's been reassigned in the CAO's office, and this would actually not be within her assignment, but she has been with it so long and likes it so much and insisted that she stay with it. So, Nikki, I appreciate that fact. It's nice to have the continuity, and I appreciate your effort in doing so. So thank you. And the members of the committee, too.
That brings something to mind that I should have mentioned. The committee not only reviews the application, but each of these organizations provides a end-of-year report 60 days after the end of the fiscal year. Hint, hint. Anyway, they review that also. We spend about a month and a half meeting each week for anywhere from 4 to 5 hours. So it is a long process, and the committee is, they do a great job, and we really appreciate them.
Please express our gratitude to the committee as well.
Yes, thank you.
And Nikki, I may, if I want to echo those comments, but did you want to respond to how much fun you're having coming back doing this?
Actually, it is a tremendous amount of fun. The committee is wonderful to work for. Organizations, many who are represented here are wonderful. They provide great information, but more importantly, they really provide a service out in the community that is appreciated. And so it is a whole lot of fun. I'm dreading the day that they take this assignment away from me, actually. So
I know I speak for many in the audience, as well as those that watch on television and listen to us, that they really appreciate the great job you do, because it's a tough challenge to come through and listen and read all those compelling arguments and try to pay the truth. So thank you for the great work that you do.
Thank you.
Any other questions for board members? Seeing none, we'll move into public comment. Each person will get 3 minutes. Please use your time wisely. First speaker is Jeanette Duncan, followed by Colonel Jack Jones.
Is this microphone on first?
Yes, ma'am.
Is it on? Okay. I'm Jeanette Duncan, the director of People Self-Help Housing. I was here Monday morning. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but we did apply for $25,000 and did go through an appeal process and met with the committee. It was obvious to me the committee doesn't really understand, I think, what we were asking for, but the bottom line is that we will no longer be able to accept referrals from any of the shelter programs because we are not involved at the time they're being referred to us with our clinical staff that could do an assessment of their capacity to actually be able to maintain their housing once we accept them. And we have right now almost 600 affordable rentals in this county. We have 60 more coming online, and we had agreed on a tentative basis to waive some of our normal requirements, that would be credit or some of the past history, but we're finding it just isn't working. And we do have clinically trained staff, that social workers that could be involved at the time people are referred, to really work with the different agencies that are bringing them to us to make sure they're really ready to live independently and what type of services they're going to need. And as I indicated on Monday, we've tried. even with our staff working, we're having about a 50% failure rate. And the cost to the county, the cost to the families, the cost to the children to have to ask them to leave is really quite expensive. And so I ask for your consideration on this. We would like to partner and really provide the affordable housing for people that are in need. But we cannot do it without some funding for our professional staff to work with them when they come in. So.
Thank you for your comments. And Jeanette, Supervisor Patterson has a question. I'm sorry.
Ms. Duncan, would you describe exactly what the funding would be used for and how it will alleviate the problems you just described?
Right. Well, we are an official training site for Antioch University clinical psychology graduate students, but we also have a licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist on staff. And when people are applying to our housing, normally they have to meet credit criteria, income criteria. But if there's a referral from an agency that indicates this person has been homeless or this person has had a history of drug or alcohol or other types of issues, then our staff are available to, first of all, be during that interview and then find out what agencies they're already hooked up to. If they're not, then try to do a services plan for them. And since we have our staff live on site, our property management staff, they can then call our supportive housing staff if there's a crisis or if someone is behind on the rent or if there are other issues related once we accept them in housing. So this would be a part-time position for a clinically trained person to work with all the referrals that we get into our housing units.
So basically this would fund a coordinator to ensure that the people you take from referrals from other agencies would be coordinated with or connected with the various
find out first of all to do a really thorough assessment of this person's strengths and weaknesses, because what we're finding is that although they may get referred in and maybe they've had some credit counseling, maybe they've had budgeting classes, maybe they're hooked up with mental health or social services, we find that once someone comes into an apartment, you know, they're on their own at that point in time. And unless we have the capacity to know enough about this person and what is needed if they backslide, for example, if it's a mental health client, which we did accept, they don't take medications, and they refuse services, and we, rather than call the police, rather than call the, you know, have these kind of issues, if we know that person's been connected with mental health, had a caseworker or a therapist, we can call immediately and hook them up. So we're talking about once we're going to accept them into permanent housing, which you have to have if you're going to move people off the streets. So
how many people do you estimate that you have now that have been referred from various agencies?
In our units now? Yeah. Well, we have almost 600 units. I would say we have at least 100. And unfortunately, as I told you on Monday, we're having to evict a large portion. We accepted 25 households last year, and over half are going to be evicted.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, before you start, I wanted to go back over some of the ground rules, I guess. We've got about 40-some-odd speakers, so that's well over an hour's worth of testimony. I know a lot of you people here have other jobs and things to do, so what we're going to do this morning is when I call your name, you're going to go forward. If board members have questions or comments of that person, I request that they ask them before their public time is up so they can do that. Otherwise, they're probably going to have to leave or go to other places, and it'll, I think, make our time more useful and exchange some dialogue, and hopefully we won't have too many questions or waste a lot of time. But I think it's going to be a more efficient way to do that. So I appreciate you asking the questions then. Because some people have told me they had to leave. Mr. Jones, followed by Roy Mueller.
Good morning, gentlemen. I am Jack Jones. I live in San Luis Obispo on 2464 Flora Street. I am the director of the Central Coast Veterans Museum. In this day and age, we're very sorry to say that we are losing over 1,500 veterans a day. In 2003, we realized that as these veterans passed on, that there was a place that needed to be a repository for their artifacts to preserve the history of their that they have written with their blood throughout the years. The formation of the Central Coast Veterans Museum occurred at that time. It has been running on the basis of time, talent, and treasure, especially treasure, of its members since it's begun, and has done a miraculous job, in my humble opinion, of bringing that museum up to the quality that it is and doing the things that we have been able to do. We do have a partnership with the Library of Congress where we do a living history program with veterans that can tell their stories that is recorded for perpetuity, having to do with their experiences during the Great War. We are also in league with the schools and with other veterans organizations for bringing students into the museum to be able to acquaint them with the elements of patriotism, leadership, and how this country has progressed from its past. In order to make a museum of this sort function, we do need some financial help. The engine is just starting up on this museum, and it's chugging along, but it does need assistance in order to grow and to be able to fulfill its mission to serve the veterans of this county and the citizens of this county by providing a place, a haven for artifacts, and to be able for them to come and see what the veterans have done for them. The museum is open to the public. We have many events that we have held there and that we plan to hold. We have also joined in concert and in a coalition with other veterans museums in the county, and we are trying to raise the awareness of the public. To do this, it takes some financial help in order to be able to promote not only the museum, which helps in tourism, and it also helps to educate the public as to what has happened in the past. I'll take any questions at this time.
Mr. Jones, specifically, how much are you asking for?
The total project package is $27,000.
Thank you. Are there any questions from board members?
Not to Mr. Jones, but maybe Ms. Schmidt, because in our staff shows $29,850, but it is $27,000.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
The figures I had through our staff was $29,850, but I hear you say $27,000.
Our treasurer just whispered over my shoulder that you were correct and I was incorrect. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
No other questions from board members?
Thank you,
John. Roy Mueller, followed by Ann Robinson.
Good morning, Chairman Lenthal and the supervisors. My name is Roy Mueller. I'm the Executive Director of the Children's Museum of San Luis, and I'm here this morning to ask for your support for a joint grant request that's been submitted by both the Children's Museum here in San Luis as well as the Children's Museum in Paso Robles. I'd like to take a few minutes to discuss the value of a children's museum in our community and summarize our grant requests. Children's museums help children develop essential foundational skills and light a creative spark for learning. Neuroscience has discovered that the first years of life are essential to future learning, and children's museums to provide developmentally appropriate environments that stimulate excitement about learning especially for underserved children and families who may have little exposure to this type of world-class exhibits and program experiences offered at a children's museum. Children's museums are also oases for families to connect in meaningful ways. They're places away from work and household distractions where parents and caregivers can spend quality time with their kids and even learn something new themselves. Children's museums strengthen community resources that educate and care for children. They add vital programs and experiences in the arts, sciences, humanities, where programs may have been cut or eliminated elsewhere in the community. They also provide workshops for parents, teachers, child care professionals that further learning about kids' education. And finally, children's museums contribute to local economies and reduce economic barriers. The total economic activity for all children's museums in the Association of Children's Museums, which is a nationwide, worldwide organization, is $448 million a year. More than 30 million individuals annually visit children's museums around the world. They're sought after local and tourist destinations. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but nearly one-third of visitors to the county here in St. Louis travel here with children. Before the Children's Museum in St. Louis closed in 2004, it served 40,000 annual visitors, including 5,000 school children. Between the two museums that are applying for this grant, we anticipate that we will serve 95,000 visitors annually. As to our grant request, we are requesting $69,982 to support two different things. Free admission for the inaugural opening week of each museum. The Paschal Children's Museum is scheduled to open in September, St. Louis in December. And a series of once monthly free days or evenings for each institution's grand opening year. The grant would support admission fees, staff time, and marketing efforts to create awareness within the county of these remarkable learning resources. I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions from board members or Mr. Mueller? Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Ann Robinson, followed by Jennifer Rimes.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Linthal and supervisors. I'm Ann Robinson. I'm the president of the board of the St. Louis Children's Museum. And as Roy said, we're here today together. We have put in a request together with the Paso Robles Children's Museum to support an admission-free opening week of our children's, both children's museums, and one free day a month for the first year. And we believe this free admission would provide access to a valuable resource to the underserved children and families in the community by allowing them to come in without paying admission. And the old Children's Museum in San Luis Obispo really did serve the entire county. We found, look back through our records, and in the past, three-quarters of our visitors came from outside the city of San Luis Obispo, including 28% from South County, 25% from North County, and 20% from the coast. So we're broadly represented. And between for the new museums, between the two, we expect to really serve all of the county. So this is a countywide resource, not just a city resource for one or the other cities. It'll and serve everybody, plus all the visitors who come here. So that's why we really feel that providing free admission to both museums is something that will serve all the families, particularly those who won't otherwise have access to the museums and all the exciting things they can learn and do there as young families with young children. So the families of San Luis Obispo and all their children would really thank you for your support. And I'll also point out that we did you a favor by not inviting them all here to speak for themselves, too. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions from board members? Thank you, Mrs. Robinson. Jennifer Rimes, followed by Linda McGregor.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Rines. I'm the director of the YMCA. Our main office is located on Southwood Drive in San Luis, but we have programs located throughout the county, two of which you funded in Shandon and San Miguel. And I'd like to express our gratitude, not only our gratitude, but the gratitude of the citizens in those two communities that have a great need and actually very few opportunities. And ask you to consider funding yet another community that does have great need and has citizen leadership in the form of the Lions Club and other citizens to provide a teen center on a drop-in basis for teens in Cambria. And the Lions Club not only has supplied the facilities and pays all the utilities, but they have been active fundraisers in funding the ongoing operations there. The program has been so popular that now we find ourselves in a position where there are more kids than is wise for one supervisor, and so we need to either limit attendance or increase supervision levels at the Cambria Teen Center, and so we're asking that you consider an additional $5,000 to fund that. It would be 4 of the 7 days or 6 days that they're open. As we've tracked our statistics, we know which days are our high attendance days at this site. What I'd like to demonstrate to you is the need in Cambria. Oftentimes, Cambria is not thought of as a high-need community, and what you can see here is kind of three trackers of need. ESL, you'll find Cambria falls right between Shannon and San Miguel. Dropout rates, you'll find that Cambria falls right between Shannon and San Miguel. And in the free lunch percentage situation, Cambria falls a close third to those two communities. So I would just ask that you encourage that community who's been very active in their fundraising. This weekend they have a bike race that will raise about $8,000 to fund that ongoing operation.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions from board members, from Ms. Rines? Thank you. Linda McGregor, followed by Jim Brabeck.
Hello. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your consideration for Hotline. I'm Linda McGregor. I'm a longtime volunteer of Hotline. And I would like to speak on behalf of Hotline. I know many of you have heard about 211, which is some new technology and a new service that Hotline is bringing to San Luis Obispo County. Unfortunately, it was an oversight this year that we did not apply for funding for Hotline, our basic core service. While there's a huge focus on the new technology, unfortunately, we did not represent our core business, which is Hotline. And while we're focusing on getting ready to convert later this year, we have a business to run. Changing to 211, I like to say it's a little bit like changing the engine while the car is running. And we have a job to do this year to get ready for November when the engine is rebuilt. In the meantime, we have a job to keep the citizens of this county connected to the vital services they need. Hotline gets 12,000 calls a year, and those callers, we have an obligation to them to serve them while we are busy putting in new technology. Last year, we were granted 32,000. You have been very generous with us in the past, and we hope you will consider us this year, although we didn't apply. We had to take steps this year. We terminated our executive director. Our board of directors is running the business. We are very close to putting in a new executive director, hopefully within the next month. And in that time, we are working very diligently to maintain the quality and the quantity of service that we provide, and we want to keep doing that. Hotline needs to maintain the infrastructure in a quality way so that we can build upon that as a basis for the new technology. And we must do that so we can have a good framework for 211. And in order to do that, we have to invest in the old technology. The longer we wait to convert, the longer we're running on the old engine, and it's falling apart. And we need to make some investments in that engine to keep it running. We have people in the county depending on us, and while we prepare for disaster, we have to keep the safety net going. So we have all of the people in the county counting on us this year, and we have to provide that service. We have several projects underway. We have to keep training. We have to keep volunteers. We're losing them because the training isn't good. We have a human services directory, which is old. We need to publish. There are many projects we have underway. We have to get going this year and keep it moving till 211's implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McGregor, staff has recommended funding $20,000 for the implementation of 211. What is your request for operations for Hotline?
I have projects here totaling $29,300 that we need to fund for operations for Hotline. Our ability to raise funds for Hotline is extremely challenging. It's very difficult, both contention for resources to fundraise and also ability to get people to contribute to the old service when you've got such a focus on 211. It's very difficult to get regular fundraising. So we have special needs for about $29,300 in projects this year.
And then the plan is to roll Hotline into the 211 service. It'll be one entity at that point.
Correct. That's correct.
Thank you.
Different technology, same service.
Supervisor Asajj.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the same executive director going to serve 211 and Hotline?
I'm sorry?
The same executive director that you're in the process to hire will serve the needs of Hotline and 211?
Correct.
Okay. So the $20,000 will go towards the executive director for the operations of 211.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Cacho.
The $20,000 that's going to be implemented towards 211, is that for the executive director's income? Or that's for the operating of the 211? Maybe Ms. Schmidt can help us.
I understand that that $20,000 that was approved will go towards marketing efforts, and the director will manage that effort.
So that's for marketing. Thank you.
For their launch.
And the launch. Yes. I think we have people here that will specifically speak to that, the launch and the 211 effort. But, yes, they will manage that.
I just want to thank you because I know without an executive director what it is to run a nonprofit organization. Thank you, board members, for staying in and keeping the doors open.
And Ms. McGraver, if I might, I just want to make sure I'm clear in my mind. The reason this request didn't come through like it normally has for several years in the past because of a personnel issue. And so that's right. Why you're here today, because it wasn't a light item. It's not like you asked for something and it got less. You never submitted an application because of a personnel issue.
That's correct. I apologize for that. It was a personnel issue and we didn't.
Thank you. See, no more questions. Thank you for your comments. Jim Brabeck, followed by Tim Williams.
Mr. Chairman, gentlemen of the board, staff, first of all, I want to say that your task today is not an easy one. I commend you for taking the challenge, and I also want to echo what Supervisor Patterson said about Vicki. I just told her I'm surprised her hair isn't snow white, given what she has to deal with, but it's a tough job. I'm a resident of Los Osos, and I'm here this morning to support Hotline and their request for funding. I'm not here to cast aspersions on their former executive director, but it was a major error that the grant was not submitted to the county. Hotline has always been supported by this county. Historically, last year the county gave them $32,000. The fact that they weren't on the agenda was just totally a personnel issue. The lady that spoke before me, Linda McGregor, was a Hotline board member and is the person who basically is the executive director moving this process forward to get Hotline back on its feet as we move forward with the 211 transition, which is scheduled to be online later this year. I'm also a member of the 211 steering committee for the county, and this error came about when we were talking about funding, and this became known. It's like, wow, this is a major league wreck that this wasn't submitted. So I'm here to support them for the request for their grant, even though it wasn't submitted prior. Hotline has been in this county for 37 years, which is amazing to me, and I served 10 years as a board member. I'm a board member emeritus of Hotline. Is that they manage that organization on a volunteer basis and field last year 12,000 calls with volunteers who remain anonymous. Nobody even knows who they are. They have 3 paid staff members, and I would defy any organization, corporate or otherwise, to come up with their efficiency scale and what they do in providing services to this county. And I know money's very, very tight, but given what they've done historically, the historical funding from the county to support Hotline, especially since they've been tagged as the implementers of 211, so that when it gets going, that is going to be the entity that has the expertise to take it on and make it happen in a successful way, which has really taken a lot of pressure off the 911 dispatchers, because in times of emergency, they get flooded with calls, and a lot of them aren't emergency calls. Everybody wants to know where to go get what. And Texas demonstrated recently with the Katrina hurricanes, 211 saved their bacon in a big way, and that's what we're hoping to do here. So right now, the urgency is to keep Hotline going on a positive track. That's what Linda's here to ask for in terms of funding, and that's what I'm here to support. I do not envy your task making these decisions, but I would just ask that you look with favor upon our request this morning. And I'll answer any questions about Hotline or 211 if you have them.
Thank you. Any other questions from board members for Mr. Brabeck? Well, sir, thank you for coming down.
Thank you for your time. And Vicki, thank you.
Next, actually, we've got two. I guess they came up together. We have Tim Williams and Karen Fields. I don't know if you're going to have opposing microphones or going to have a compact presentation here.
Okay, we're trying to save you time.
I'm Karen Fields. I'm the president of Hotline, and I am here to discuss the grant that was for $50,000 that was submitted for the launch of 211 Startup Goth specifically. I want to thank you for your consideration. There are several, as you heard through Linda and Jim, the launch was supposed to happen in July, but due to things that came about, it has been pushed back to the end of the year, which is increased costs in our project plan. And so we're here to plead our case for the cost to implement this correctly. In addition to that, PG&E has offered matching funds for any funds that we bring in up to $25,000. So I wanted to share that with you also. And Tim will go over, he's my technological guy, and he will go over some of the costs.
Karen and I both are on the 211
Street. You still need to state your name for the record, sir.
I'm sorry. Tim Williams, incoming president for Hotline, and also on the 211 Steering Committee. Karen is as well. Specifically, what we'll be using the funds for that we're in need of now, there are two key issues that we've seen as an issue during this rollout. One is a heavy communication effort is needed for volunteers. We've had great volunteers, as Jim said, for 37 years. We need to continue that because for the compliance for the CPUC to provide 211 service, we do have to have the round-the-clock hotliners answering the phone. We're looking sort of outside the box here. We've had a great retirement community volunteers that have helped. We're looking to establish possibly some satellite offices in some of the communities where they can actually stay there and still answer the calls while being supervised by our supervisors. So the effort to recruit volunteers is a big one. Secondly is our staffing. As you heard, we just completed a recruitment for a new executive director. We have a candidate, and we hope that's going to be successful. But we also need a 211 coordinator and another program manager. This effort, it takes time and resources that we have, but it'll definitely bring what we need for compliance for the CPUC application. The CPUC application is in. The ball is rolling. The timelines are established, and they're workable now. Fundraising continues, but we must begin that fundraising at home. We're asking for startup funds. We will not be back here next year asking for these. This is what we need to complete the 211 project. Thank you.
Questions from board members are there?
For clarification, your request is 50 and you received 20.
Correct.
We're just requesting the full request is what we're looking for.
And if I may, before you sit down, I just want to remind my colleagues, in our budget documents, they refer to 211 on page B94, reference to the sheriff's additional request for positions. And if I read this, an additional dispatcher position is not recommended at this time as the county is working with local agencies and organizations to implement a non-emergency 211 calling center. One of the benefits from developing a 211 calling center is the reduction in non-emergency 911 calls. Currently, non-emergency calls comprise substantial call volume to the 911 center. It's recommended that 211 call center become operational as soon as possible, and to defer these non-emergency calls to 211s and offset additional dispatch needs. So there is a saving for county taxpayers from getting this done. It's been proven in other states, and I think Mr. Brabeck talked about that in the state of Texas. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the funding amount impact the schedule as to when 211 would come online, or has that been deferred now until November?
It's been deferred until the end of November.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Wendy Wendt, followed by Johnny Biagini. And please introduce your assistant there, too, since he's on
okay,
television.
Okay, absolutely will. Good morning, Chairman Linthal, Vice Chair Patterson, Mr. Sajjan, Mr. Gibson, and Mr. Ovett. My name is Wendy Wendt, and this is my 8-year-old son, Samuel. We are residents of Los Osos, and I am on the board of the San Luis Obispo Children's Museum. Samuel and I are here today to tell you how excited kids and families all over the county are about the upcoming Children's Museum openings in Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo. This is truly a banner year for our county to have these two incredible projects reaching completion and opening their doors to all of us. And what a world these doors will open onto. My 5-year-old next-door neighbor in Los Osos can't wait to climb the clock tower in San Luis Obispo. My son Samuel said he's heading straight for the lava claymation exhibit when it opens. My daughter is hankering to go up to Paso Robles to the grape stomp. And a colleague at Cal Poly hopes to bring a child development class to observe the early childhood wing in action. Recently, a woman I met at the grocery store in Morro Bay hopes to take her grandkids on a grand tour of San Luis Obispo County Children's Museums. I'm looking forward to reuniting with museum member families from Paso Robles to Santa Maria at what one friend used to call the County Commons for Kids. This is a banner year for children in San Luis Obispo County. Samuel and I urge the county to honor them and the achievements of the hundreds of volunteers and donors who have brought these extraordinary children's museums home to our kids. By funding the two museums' opening weeks and monthly free time during the inaugural year, you will help us make it possible for the whole community, regardless of income, to celebrate and explore these hubs of creativity and learning together. Thank you.
Okay. Sure you didn't want to say anything?
He just wanted to say thank you.
Does he want to wave and see himself up on the screen?
No, that's okay.
We're better than Burger King. You can have it your way here. Johnny Biagini, that's a tough act to follow. You don't want to go after a young child like that.
I wish I had the talent with me. Good morning, Mr. Supervisors and Chairman. I'm Johnny Biagini, Executive Director of the San Luis County Visitors and Conference Bureau. And I want to thank you for your continued support of the tourism industry. It's your number one industry. It is your economic engine in the county. The tourism generates close to $6 million that goes to the general fund to help support many of the organizations that are here today. We are a nonprofit organization as well, and yet we are one that happens to generate funds to support the community. The Visitors and Conference Bureau has been your tourism promotion agency for the past 20 years, and as we become of age this next year, we have many challenges that are facing us. First and foremost, it's the law of supply and demand. Our county will be welcoming a 40% increase in lodging rooms over the next 5 years. Which means in order to maintain the same kind of occupancy levels in our lodging, we have to increase demand from 10% a year to some years 20% a year. That is a very large order on our plate. Secondly, our competition is out-promoting us anywhere from 4 to 5 times in our target markets, especially Southern California. So, for instance, Monterey County's $4 million tourism promotion budget is going to be spent in Southern California. Their voice will be heard much more louder and more often than ours will be, and that's a challenge that we have to face. The other part of our industry is that we're very vulnerable. The tourism industry is more vulnerable to the conditions of the day, whether they are man-made disasters, natural disasters, or things like gas prices. So we have to roll with those punches as well. We have some exciting opportunities, however, on the horizon that we hope to take advantage of with our very lean budget, namely a new air service from Salt Lake City on Delta Airlines, which we hope will bring in a whole new clientele that will help increase that demand, as well as our number one icon in the state and in the county, which is Hearst Castle, will be celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. We want to make sure that's a blockbuster thing. We have done an incredible job with the tools that we have. It's the number one industry, employing over 16,000 people. 8 million people generate $1 billion in expenditures, which generates taxes. Our Visitors and Conference Bureau programs are tangible benefits. Over 530 members see those benefits, the largest membership ever, and we hope to continue that with a partnership between the private sector and public sector. It can't be done alone. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Biagini, I know that you've been working for the last 2 to 3 years on a business improvement district to generate more revenue to help promote tourism
right. In
San Luis Obispo County. Could you give us a very short summary of how that project is going? I know you've been working with the cities, and hopefully it'll eventually come back to us, but why don't you, since you're here, give us a brief update.
I love this opportunity. First and foremost, it is a lodging industry initiative, and it's the lodging industry that has to support it, and it has taken a few turns over the last 2.5 years. It is now a proposal that will benefit the local jurisdictions as well as a countywide tourism promotion. It is a 2% share being proposed with 1% going back to the jurisdictions. It is a long process, as you can see, 2.5 years into it, and I don't anticipate that it would we would be able to collect funds prior to January of 2008. So that puts things even further behind to be able to compete with the $4 million budgets of Monterey, Sonoma, and other destinations. In the meantime, other destinations are establishing BIDs. Southern California, Ventura, Santa Barbara is looking at it. So we need to be in that ballpark. It's going to take a long time, and we hope that we are successful in getting that passed.
Ms. Biagini, I just have to ask, were you looking at Supervisor Asajjan when you said the increase in gas prices?
I purposely did not.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Rick Minton, followed by Emily Renault.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Rick Minton. I'm the president of the board of the Children's Museum at the Paso Robles Volunteer Firehouse. In the interest of time, all the board members that I have here with me will not speak this morning, but I will introduce them to you. Mary Ann Heinen, our board treasurer. Rob Nash, a member of the board who was the architect who did all the work that transformed that old firehouse into a children's museum. And Jean St. Martin, who is our operations chair with the board. And Emily Renault is our interim executive director, and she's next to speak. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to make this request to you on behalf of our board and tell you that the Children's Museum in Paso Robles is going to be an opportunity for the children of the North County to have that interactive experience that you heard Mr. Mueller talk about. One of the goals of the Children's Museum in Paso Robles is the opportunity to serve underprivileged children. And I won't go into the details of that, but there are a large number of children who we believe are underserved in northern San Luis Obispo County who will have the opportunity, if this grant is awarded, to attend the Children's Museum free during the opening week and then on a monthly basis throughout our inaugural year. The Children's Museum in Paso Robles is also designed to honor the volunteer heritage of the community and to not only honor the volunteer firefighters who have served in the community for so many years, but the volunteer heritage that has served this community and brought people together for a number of years. This is a great opportunity for the two museums to work together as well, and we welcome the opportunity and thank the board from the Children's Museum in San Luis Obispo for this opportunity to partner with them. One of the things that we were asked in the beginning was, aren't you going to be competing with this other children's museum? And our answer was, absolutely not. We can work together to support and educate the children of all of San Luis Obispo County, and we thank you for your consideration in our request.
Thank you. I have no questions from board members. I appreciate your comments. Ms. Renault?
Yes, hi. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to present our side of the story. We were thrilled to collaborate.
Renault, you need to state your name.
I'm sorry. Emily Renault from the Paso Robles Children's Museum, or the Children's Museum at the Paso Robles Volunteer Firehouse. We were thrilled to collaborate with the San Luis Children's Museum, and we really look forward to a collaborative relationship from this day forward. I was always taught not to perform with children or dogs, so therefore I left my three children at home, who are 13, 8, and 3, which just happens to be the target for our museum. That's an audience that is actually pretty well underserved in general, whether they're lower income or upper income. Our county does not have a whole lot of services for those children. But I was really excited about the opportunity for this grant, possibly, to fund a free day, because we really want this museum to be for all children in our community. And we also look forward to launching it with our grand opening week. So with that, I think everyone's stated everything else.
I see no questions. Thank you for your comments. Often I have the pleasure of assisting my colleague, Supervisor Asajjan, in pronouncing names. This time I'm going to ask him, because the next person I'm introduced, I've always known as Elias, but I don't want to mispronounce his last name. So, Katja, would you do the honors, please?
Yes, it's Elias Name. It translates into Silver Fox.
Just to show you, we never want to lose our sense of humor on our third day of budget hearings. I'm going to stick with Elias because that's what I've known you for 35 years, so I'm
well,
sorry.
Thanks. I'll call you Jerry, too. Good morning. My name is Elias Nima, as pronounced these days. I'm the director for Senior Nutrition Program. And what we do is provide, literally, food to the seniors in San Luis Obispo County. So this program is not like providing toothpaste or clothing or shelter, but it is vital necessity for life. I want to thank the board for, or the board and the county for giving us grants in the past. Last year's was $23,750, which is good. Recommendation for this year was $24,000. My request was for $30,000, difference of $6,000. The reason I'm here to talk about the extra $6,000 that I really need, reasons are the costs, as you have well aware of, cost of food, cost of gas, cost of supplies, all have gone up, and we're faced with minimum wage last year wasn't budgeted for, coming up again this January. Second, more important reason is the seniors and what our services provide is very vital to their health and their independence to be able to stay longer in their homes and not to be a burden on the county. And I want to urge you to reconsider for the six extra thousand that will help me greatly for this coming year. Last year's money-wise, we were short about $40,000. So I hope we will be much better this year by the end of June. But $6,000 will be great help for next year. And I just want you to think about it, that we're not providing anything but food for the seniors. Thank you.
Thank you. And Elias, before you step down, Supervisor Patterson has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Elliot, does your organization buy its food from the food bank?
No.
You don't? Okay. Is that an option for you? Because
no,
I know
it's not
your
an
food
option.
It's not.
We have to buy food from certified sellers, like companies like U.S. Foods, Cisco, companies. We don't get food from the food bank.
Okay. It's my understanding that they do have sources that are certified, and I guess you may know that better than I, but anyway, I know their food is pennies on the dollar.
They do provide some food in the form of brown bag to the seniors, but the way we order food is they won't be able to do it.
Supervisor Asajan?
Number of the seniors you provide food for countywide?
Countywide, we have on our list about 1,700 seniors. We cook about 600 meals a day.
And this is done every day, how many times a day, or is it one-time delivery?
We cook 600 meals a day, 5 days a week, and on the weekend we prepare frozen meals to deliver on Friday for Saturday and Sunday.
Now, obviously, since gas has been brought up, with gas prices, all this delivered by personal cars, trucks, volunteers?
Well, we have two main refrigerated trucks that deliver to the North and South County, and then the meals delivered to the homebound is done through, thank God, all the volunteers that we have, without which we could never operate.
And the source of the food that you purchase from, is it on a wholesale level or market level or...?
Retail, like any other restaurant or business.
Because I was thinking of the same terms if the food bank was to come into the picture and be able to provide anything on a wholesale level, if that would have been any help. But that's something the two organizations can work together at another time. And since we like both the organizations, sure. It's nice to see a marriage there where one can be benefit to the other.
There's nothing I would like more, except our menus are set specifically with special nutrition, diets, amounts by the ounce. It's measured and cooked on a daily basis, a month or two in advance, and it would be impossible for a food bank to provide that kind of food for us.
And if I may, it's just because it's important for our consideration, we have a representative from the food bank. Trance, would you please step forward? Is there a legal reason or a requirement or a policy that would have to be addressed? Is there something that the food bank can't be a joint partner or venture in this? Because I know literally you do buy food for pennies on the dollar, and that's what we're talking about here.
Well, I think the biggest...
Can you state your name for the record, sir?
Carl Hansen, Executive Director of the Food Bank Coalition. We would love to cooperate in any way that could be explored, but I think the biggest restriction is that the food bank is chartered to serve only low-income seniors. Okay. And the low-income population in the county. And as I understand the senior nutrition program, there aren't any income restrictions, that every senior qualifies because of age rather than income.
Correct.
Whereas our programs require not only for the senior brown bag program, for example, not only that they be 60 or older, but that the income levels be a maximum at about $1,250 a month for one individual, or $2,300 a month approximately for two people in a household. So that's an issue we'd have to try to overcome.
Well, now that you two have met, what I would hope is in the future that maybe you can refer Elias to some of your vendors. Maybe they want to come on board. Maybe they can help him reduce his food costs. So, you know, we're all trying to do good service here. And if he can't go through you, perhaps you can introduce him to the people he needs to be in contact with so he can not have to buy all his food at the retail or wholesale level from the again.
Be delighted to entertain that conversation.
And as Supervisor Sidon said, I think it's a marriage. Is that what you just performed? Is that the word you use, sir?
Working relationship.
Working relationship. And Elias, I want to know, I've known you 35 years, and until Supervisor Asajan said you're also known as a Silver Fox, I would have never thought of that.
Thank you. I never heard that before.
Maybe Cacho's been holding out on us. Next speaker is Tony Bauman, followed by Glynis Chafin Tingloff. Did I pronounce that? And we are serious, but it's okay to laugh every now and then.
Thank you. My name is Tony Bauman. I am the board president of Arts Obispo. And on behalf of our organization, I'd like to thank all of you for the support that we've received over the years from the Board of Supervisors. Specifically, our arts and education program has benefited from your generosity over the years. With past grants, we have provided performing and visual arts and field trips to all of our county's children. This year, we were able to adopt the highly successful Poetry Out Loud program into our county schools, and we hope to grow that even bigger in the coming years. For the 2007 and 2008 school year, we are now piloting a new program which will infuse the arts into the classrooms with our underprivileged and special needs children. We are doing this program with the assistance of the County Symphony, the Mozart Festival, the Central Coast Center for Arts Education, all of whom are nonprofits. So we are forming a consortium together to increase the arts education and the quality of education for these special needs children. With your future support, we hope to grow this program to all of the districts within the county and provide a quality education to all of our county's children. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Glynis Chafin Tingloff, did I pronounce it properly?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good
Followed
morning.
By Marta Peluso.
Good morning. My name is Glynis Chafin Tingloff. I'm on the board of Arts Obispo. I'm also their secretary. I'm here today to talk about Arts Obispo. We are the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council. As an artist, I've had the good fortune to receive support and encouragement from Arts Obispo almost from the moment I moved to San Luis Obispo. The very first year I moved here, which was in the year 2000, I participated in the Open Studios Art Tour. And I have participated every year since. I've found that it's a wonderful means of meeting other artists, art appreciators, and art buyers. My studio visitors have been from Slo County and beyond. Every year when I review my guest book, I'm impressed by how many out-of-town visitors have come to tour the county's art studios. So we are providing quite the cultural tourism. This coming Open Studios will be my eighth year, and I have watched this event grow and improve. This year, we will have the most artists on tour yet. We have over 280 artists on galleries and galleries on tour this October, and I'm particularly excited to see many new artists joining the ranks. I believe we have 75 first-time artists. This is a county-wide event. We have studio locations ranging from Ragged Point to the southern and easternmost regions of the county. If you've never gone out on tour, I highly recommend it. You'll see a wonderful array of artists that live and work in San Luis County. The other aspect of our organization that we are proud and excited about is our Arts Obispo News. This is a quarterly publication that we distribute to our 14,000 readers. Arts Obispo News highlights the arts events happening in the county. These art events include visual, literary, musical, and performing arts events. Our aim is to become the information clearinghouse for arts events in the county. Through our Arts Obispo News, our expanded website, and our art space events, we want to strengthen the cultural heartbeat of this county. We thank you for your generous show of support. Arts Obispo is at a critical junction. We are working to improve and expand our arts programs countywide. We hope you will consider the full $41,000 grant award so we can expand our mission of advancing the arts in San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Marta Peluso, followed by Grace McIntosh.
Good morning. I am Marta Peluso. I'm the Executive Director of Arts Obispo. And I just want to assure you that Arts Obispo is serious about our role as the designated local partner of the California Arts Council. We have collaborated with you, the County Board of Supervisors, for more than 25 years to advance the arts in San Luis Obispo County. It's not been an easy job, and in fact, we have often needed to step into the shoes that have been left empty by the withdrawal of state leadership in support of arts in our schools and the withdrawal of leadership for our nonprofit cultural organizations. In fact, the California Arts Council, the organization that conceived the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council, its existence 26 years ago, withdrew all funding from arts councils throughout the state in 2004. Many arts councils closed their doors at that time, but the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council, now known as Arts Obispo, weathered the storm and would not have been able to do that without a strong support of local community, including the ongoing support of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. We thank you for that ongoing support that has enabled us to continue to serve county citizens even in the very leanest of years. Arts Obispo has tremendous momentum at this particular point in time because we've recently completed a strategic planning workshop with a professional nonprofit consultant. This was generously supported by the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation, which meant a lot to us that they believed in our organization to support that kind of input. I want to just share with you that we have 10 active programs that support our goals to advance the arts in San Luis Obispo County. They include arts and education that Tony Bowman, who has addressed to you. This includes Poetry Out Loud and our newest program, Arts Curriculum Assistance. As Tony briefly mentioned, the Arts Curriculum Assistance is a pilot program that we're starting this year for school districts that cannot afford to take advantage of some of the other nonprofit opportunities that are offered in this community. I want to point this out because so often in the nonprofit communities we're being told we need to consolidate efforts. Of course, you all know that there are over 1,000 nonprofit organizations in this county. So what we came up with this particular curriculum assistance program was to provide financial assistance for some school districts that cannot afford to take advantage of some of the programs offered by the Children's Creative Project and the Central Coast Center for Arts Education that's offered at Cal Poly, and to coordinate the efforts of those nonprofits.
Ms. Peluso, unfortunately, your time is up. Oh. Supervisor Patterson has a question.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pelosi, I had the pleasure, and I might even describe it as an honor, to serve as a judge for the Poetry Out Loud competition at Cal Poly, and that was in partnership with the California Arts Council, and it gave the students an opportunity to not only compete locally, but at the state level and then at the national level, perhaps, if they were able to go on. And I know one of the things that you do is partner with schools to get art into schools, which has become more and more of an elective rather than something that's offered through the school district itself. But I know in partnering with the California Arts Council, they also provide revenue, and you were waiting to hear if that was going to be forthcoming. Have you heard yet if the state's going to augment your funding at all?
Yes, the state has returned their support for county arts councils just this year. We've had to apply for it. It's not as much money as they had supported us in past years before the year 2004, but we will be getting $15,000 from California Arts Council this year that does need to be matched and locally. And the recommendation from staff is to award us $30,000, grant our organization $30,000 this year. We had requested $41,000, though, which is the amount that we had received previous to the year 2003. And the resolution making us a local partner with the county for the arts says that our funding could be up to $41,000. And so that's basically our request, is that you consider bringing us back just to the level that we received early in 2000, so that we can use this momentum that we have right now to its greatest advantage, because we really have a wonderful series of programs and a great board right now.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Ms. McIntosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Grace McIntosh. I'm the Executive Director of the American Red Cross here in San Luis Obispo County. On behalf of our board of directors, our staff, and our over 300 volunteers, I just want to thank you. I want to thank the committee for their hard work. I know it's not easy making some of the decisions that this committee has had to do, and I appreciate their efforts. As you may know, we've been very busy this year. We've served more than double the number of individuals this year that were victims of single-family fires primarily. We have served over 14,000 people in providing first aid, CPR, babysitting, and other life-saving techniques. We also have been very active with our Armed Forces Emergency Services, linking military family members with their loved ones overseas. We've been very busy. And I just want to thank you for your support of our organization. As you know, the local chapters receive no federal funds and receive no support from the National Red Cross to provide local services. And so the dollars that you provide us are for local needs, and they stay right here in this county. So I just want to thank you for your support. I want to give you another little quick update, however, on VOAD, our real fun project here. As you know, February, we started that.
Ms. McIntosh, would you spell that out? Because I get calls all the time from people that say, you guys talk in alphabet soup. I don't understand.
Oh, VOAD? Yeah, our acronyms. Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. It's a consortium of nonprofit, faith-based, other voluntary organizations that are coming together to provide assistance and support to the local first responders during disaster response, but also in terms of long-term recovery needs, which is a huge issue. You see that in Katrina. There's 10, 15-year long-term recovery plans. So we've been meeting with organizations. We have, to date, developed our resource grid, which has human, material, and other resources that nonprofits and faith-based organizations would be prepared to provide in the event of a long-range disaster. And we've also been meeting individually with the first responders. We've been meeting with the fire chiefs, police, county emergency services, to see how best we can support their efforts. Again, this is a supportive project that we're doing with the county, and we're just really looking forward to it. We've done a tremendous amount of work just in the few months that we've been in operation. That's it. Thank you again.
Ms. McIntosh, I also want to commend you, because I did get to participate in the meeting you had here with the county first responders and OES, and I know we were off to a great start, and I appreciate all the hard work and heavy lifting that you and your organization does.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Next speaker is Carl Hansen, followed by Anna Boyd Busey. And Mr. Hansen, while you're walking up to the podium, in the interest of full disclosure, I want you to know that my sister said she's getting up early in Hawaii because of all this technology work right now, because she runs the food bank over there.
That's right.
I watch you this morning, and she says, I want you to warn him that I'm watching him. So I want you to know that I passed it on. My sister says she is watching you now at, what would this be, 7-Eleven in Hawaii.
Now I really am nervous. Judy's a good friend. Chairman Lenthal, members of the board, my name is Carl Hansen. I'm the executive director of the Food Bank Coalition. I'm here today to thank you for your support of the food bank and to report on the fact on the consolidation of two nonprofit organizations, one of them being Harvest Bag in South County, with the food bank late last year. And I mention that particularly because our grant request is a combined request for your previous support of Harvest Bag and the support that has been given to the Food Bank Coalition in the past. I'm happy to say that that consolidation of our services to the community is going extremely well. All of their wonderful volunteers in an organization that has been an all-volunteer organization for the last 30 years are continuing to provide their services and are apparently very happy being part of the food bank. We're certainly very happy to have them as part of our operation. The services through our Harvest Bag, what is now our Harvest Bag program, have increased 50% in terms of the number of people that are being served. The economic efficiencies of combining these two operations in the Harvest Bag program have realized about $60,000 a year in savings because we don't have two separate warehouses now, two separate locations with all the expenses that go with that. And I want to particularly publicly recognize the staff for seeing that when these kinds of things happen, when we can combine services to the public and consolidate and have cost efficiencies, that those efforts need to be supported and not in effect penalized because of the savings that are achieved by lowering the grants from the county, because this will allow us to continue to expand our services to those who are low income in our county with greater efficiency and greater power with the united efforts of Harvest Bag and the Food Bank Coalition. So in that one instance, I just wanted to say how well it's going. And, of course, I'm here also to answer any questions you might have.
If I may, Mr.
Supervisor Sajjan.
Mr. Hansen, when you mentioned that you can only serve the seniors who are at a financially disadvantaged, stuck with the first five commission, we can only serve kids from ages 0 to 5, but if there's an organization that takes care of 0 to 18, we can still be part of the picture and serve just those 0 to 5 within their big frame of work. So as in the future, and thank you for your willingness to work with the senior nutrition, I believe there is room for partnership where you can be part of an organization that serves that portion of the seniors, can't you?
Oh, well, absolutely. And as we do in the public schools, for example, with our backpack program, the schools, we serve the low-income population of the schools through the school administration, and they certify to us who the children are that are being served. We don't get names or anything like that, but they request from us food for those low-income children. They know who they are because they're already getting help through the school program. A similar thing could happen with the senior nutrition program, where partnering with them, we would be able to help serve at least the low-income seniors. And if it's a large percentage, we could probably serve that whole population if the majority are low-income. But that isn't always the case, as I understand it.
You do make a larger purchases, which do you purchase at a wholesale level or retail? What
Well, this is another. This could be another stumbling block because, you know, the food that we get at what was described by Supervisor Patterson as pennies on the dollar is not food that we can always predict what we're going to get in terms of quantities. It's donated food, and it's donated for low-income people. And the senior nutrition program needs to buy in large quantities, and they have certain menus that have to be fulfilled and anticipated ahead of time and so forth. So it's not like being able to buy it commercially. So there are some difficulties there. Not that they couldn't be overcome to some extent. We have another way of purchasing food, which is what we call our co-op program. And we basically go out on the open market because there are always gaps of the food that we get for pennies on the dollar. And we purchase at wholesale levels or less than wholesale levels through America's Second Harvest, all kinds of food to make sure that we have a balanced diet and a nutritious diet to supply to our agencies. But those agencies pay wholesale prices to us for that. And it's cheaper normally than what they could get it at wholesale prices anywhere else. We can buy to order in, on that market. So it would be something we'd be happy to do. And if we can do it, we certainly will if they're in agreement. I think we probably could save them some money, but there are some issues that have to be worked out.
Very quickly, in the previous years, we had a hard time distributing the food stamps, but there was more available than we were taking advantage of. And I know that your organization dealt with it. Can you tell me quickly if has the success level?
Yes. Well, countywide, our success level, we are increasing in the participation rate of eligible people in our county with food stamps. Last year, the figures were a 9% increase, which is good news. It wasn't as good as the year before, which was a 26% increase, as I recall. We're finding that our program is continuing, and it's being increasingly hard as the numbers increase to find the additional people that are not being enrolled and to overcome the barriers that are in their way. A lot of them are legislative issues. There are laws that are unique to California in some ways that prohibit people from participating in food stamps if they're already getting other benefits through the state. And so we're working in our advocacy as well as our one-to-one support and counseling with people who are eligible that we come into contact with through our other programs to make sure that we can get as many enrolled as possible. And social services is very cooperative with us in terms of working to find those people and reaching out to them to try to get them enrolled.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hansen, I know 2 years ago the food bank was short on food, basically for a variety of reasons. Your sources were short and your warehouse was almost empty, and you came to the board to ask for supplemental funding to restock your warehouse, and we did that. And I know the program has literally turned around since then, and your involvement with the food stamp program, with other agencies, participating in the Obesity Prevention Task Force and providing nutrition information to your clients, all as an example of how the food bank has really come together to work with the community at large. And I just want to thank you for your efforts, because in a short 2-year period, we've seen a tremendous turnaround in the program, and it looks to be building and improving almost on a daily basis. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Supervisor Patterson. And, of course, your support, each of you from the board and the county overall, is very much appreciated, not to mention the public at large, because we've had tremendous support, generosity pouring out through the food bank, to the food bank.
And Mr. Hansen, I echo Supervisor Patterson's comments, and also the fact of, with your leadership and what you have done, I challenge you in the future, because I know through collaboration and things that you can help us out, and you'll figure a way out if you can get together with Elias to see how we can get some economies of scale and become more efficient and effective, because you've done a great job, you continue to do a great job, and I just appreciate all the work that you do, and I'm looking forward to some new challenges that you'll take on now.
Thank you very much. I might also mention that we will also be consulting with the Area Agency on Aging, because they have an important role to play in terms of helping to fund these kinds of things. And we're working very closely with them to constantly improve both our senior brown bag program and whatever else might lie on the horizon. So, thank you.
Thank you for coming down today. Anna Boyd Busey, followed by Biz Steinberg.
I'm Anna Boyd Busey with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I wanted to thank the Nikki and the board and her staff for the recommendation for funding. In 2005, we served 176 children. In 2006, we served 224 kids. And so far, halfway through 2007, we have served 208 children so far. We are a quickly growing agency. These kids are children like the family with 11 foster kids you read about in the paper last month. Five of those children have been enrolled in our program last month, and three of those already have been matched with Big Brothers or Big Sisters. One of them is 10 years old, and honestly, I thought he was six when I met him. He's tiny, he has heart problems, and we were able to match him with a volunteer gentleman who had asked to be matched with a child with disabilities because he had had polio as a child and wanted to help another child through all of the issues that go along with that. So we are very thankful for your funding that was provided and for any additional funding that somebody happens to have in their discretion.
I see. No, I have no questions, but I do have a comment. I think it was 2 months ago you invited me to your annual luncheon, and we were able to participate and give us some certificates out from some of your outstanding work and student members. And I think it's like a lot of stories. You can read about it, you can talk about it, but when you see firsthand the twinkle in these little people's eyes and see them get their certificates and award and participate in that, that would encourage you to contact whoever future chairs is when you have your luncheons in the future to have someone come down. We'll be glad to present certificates for their appreciation.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Biz Steinberg, followed by Kenna Burke.
Good morning. I'm looking at the time. 10:24. My name's Biz Steinberg. I work at EOC, and I'm also part of a lot of collaboration within this community that is always evidence on this particular day of how we all work together and try to improve the lives of everyone in our communities. So I'm first here to thank you on behalf of the Economic Opportunity Commission, the elderly folks, people who need their first month's rent. We want to try to keep people in their apartments or homes so that we don't have more homeless folks, women who need their mammograms, the elderly, again, that's a theme today, a lot of elderly needs. People are living longer. We want to keep them healthy and living in their own homes. And then lastly, I know Rush Limbaugh made our tattoo removal program very famous. We thank you for your support, because with that program, more and more people are going to work. It's a collaboration with Sierra Vista Hospital and volunteer dermatologists. It's just a winner of a program. But I also would like to just thank the person who gets all this done, and it is Nikki, in your administrative office, working with the volunteer committee. They put in hours. They know more about all the programs and the interactions than probably any of us in our own agencies. So we really thank Nikki for her commitment to meeting the needs in the community from the nonprofit sector. And after sitting and listening this morning, I mean, I kind of threw my name in last or near the end, because I wasn't going to say anything. But on behalf of a number of folks who, just to save time, we want to thank you for this excellent collaboration supported by the administrative office over these last many years, ever since, and I'm sure Harry was, I think you were here, maybe it was Mr. Heilman, but
he's on the list.
Ever since federal revenue sharing went away, this has been an excellent collaboration with the county. The nonprofit sector is exceptional in this community. We all do work together. We couldn't do all of our work without volunteers, and I think this is just a day we should all be proud of. Not everybody's getting everything. We never get everything we may need, but the county is there, the private business world is there, but our and the faith community, the volunteer sector, and of course the nonprofits in this community who have served the community at large very, very well. I just want to express our appreciation. And I'm glad this is your last day. Thank you.
Thank you, Biz. Biz, if I may, before you sit down, you can sit down, but I'm going to make a comment here because you're the first to usually step up to the plate and thank all the other people that you work with. But I'm not going to embarrass either one of us to say how many decades we've known one another, but I was introduced to you a long time ago, and they said, this is someone, this woman has her finger on the pulse of this county, and I can't think of a better definition of Biz Steinberg. So thank you for coming forward. Our last speaker is Kenna Burke.
Thank you. My name is Kenna Burke. I'm the executive director of the Children's Health Initiative. I stand in honor of Biz Steinberg. Biz came to me when we started the Children's Health Initiative and said that the only goal that she had is to have every child in the county to have health insurance. And that's really the goal that I stand before, is to try to honor Biz and her request. Since September of 2005, and with the support of the supervisors of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, we have been able to offer more than 680 children health insurance through the Healthy Kids program. We have had more than 1,600 children access services for Medi-Cal and Healthy Families through our one-step program, in which we've streamlined an application process that we hope to have brought down some of the barriers for coverage or for access for parents, so that they have a one-step process and can get coverage quickly. Our success rate for retention and getting children to maintain coverage has been 95%, which for the state, it's been about 60% for Healthy Families and Medi-Cal, so we're pretty proud of that number. Currently, we have a waiting list for children 6 to 18 of 553 kids. First Five has been incredibly gracious and has stepped forward and has provided health care for every child age 0 to 5. So technically, in San Luis Obispo County, we can say that every child 0 to 5 has access to health insurance coverage, and that's a wonderful thing to be able to state. Through state and foundation funds this year, we were able to bring in $1.9 million into the county. Through local support, through Mission Community Bank, through the Central Coast Wine Classic, the Amy Arsenio Fund, through the Community Foundation, and through other different sources, we've been able to also have support for our children. And through the great work of Isabel Ruiz, Margaret Androsky, and my other staff member, Megan Afarier-Nolan, we have done an incredible amount of outreach to our families and community members and have been able to, I think, really bring the Children's Health Initiative to fruition and hopefully to a successful place right now, to the point to where we have asked for an increase, not what staff had recommended of $200,000, but this year we actually would say that we would defer back to what staff has recommended. When we originally wrote the grant, we were in need of administrative funding. And since that point in time, the state has come through and has provided us with our needs to be met for next year. And so I don't know if that's the right thing or the smart thing to do, but I think it is the right thing to do. We had requested a 10% indirect, also in addition to our premiums. And we have now actually been able to cover that cost for 2008. So we would defer back to what staff has recommended. So we appreciate your help, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. That was my last request to speak during public comment, so we will close public comment and bring it back to the board. And since it's 10:30, we're going to take a 15-minute break before we...
Come on over.
We pulled our stuff.
As we say downtown, come on down.
Luckily for you, I'm representing both RCD and the other RCD.
First thing you have to do is state your name for the record, and then you got to promise me that you'll fill out a slip after you talk.
Okay. I did. We did. But
if I lost it, I'm sorry.
It's okay. We'll fill out another one. No problem. DJ Funk. I'm the Upper Salinas Los Tablos Resource Conservation District Executive Director. And also here tonight is, or this morning, is Chuck Pritchard. He's our board president and also... interested in this same item, and I'll be speaking for their issues as well as the Coastal San Luis RCD. and their board president is Neil Havlick. Again, first of all, I just want to thank you for the support, again, that you're giving to the RCDs, both RCDs for our programs. And it's basically good money to good people for good things, and I think that could be said for almost all of the people before me. I just wanted to bring up a couple of things that are sort of sidebars to what we're doing right now, and also relate to what the county is doing with us. Our mobile water lab is still continuing to provide water audits throughout the county of San Luis Obispo. It's a cooperative effort we do with Kachuma RCD, and we handle over hundreds of audits throughout the county, and they help people, agricultural people, and also people within communities to reduce water usage, irrigation water usage. We're working on a permit coordination program, which should be of interest to all the board members and the county itself. Right now, we're working with county staff to deal with what our environmental conditions are going to be, and the RCDs are going to be lead agencies on that, and we're getting great participation by your staff, your planning staff, and so it's a wonderful, we think it's a great collaboration of people. Our ECAP program, or Erosion Control Assistance Program, continues to provide assistance throughout the county, and again, we work with your planning department to make that happen. And last, I want to bring up a new program that we're working with your code enforcement people, and that has to do with code violators, grading code violators throughout the county. And we're working with them to provide a, what I'd call a traffic school, in quotes, for erosion issues and grading issues for the folks that are caught doing code violations through grading in the county. And so we're working with our Trinidad in that program, and we'll probably have our first classes for that traffic school in August of this summer. And I think it'll be a good program and hopefully give people an option. Instead of just paying fines or going to jail, they can come to us and learn how to do it right. So we've got a couple of other projects. At 12 seconds, we're taking out a swimming pool in San Miguel, and we're working on some other projects in the river, and we've got a lot of volunteers now, Salinas River volunteers, pulling out star thistle and doing great stuff in the river.
Thank you, Mr. Funk, and I apologize. Apparently, your slip stuck to the back of one another.
It was on there. Okay.
Supervisor Rover found it.
okay.
I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Pritchard's probably going to give me a heck out there in the lobby for losing that slip, but I sure stuck to the back of another one.
I want to make mention of the fact that this was one of those units that we moved off the community-based, and we moved it under the Farm Advisor. And so we did approve their funding that they requested already, but it has worked much better because they work together on a lot of these things.
Yep, I've been two days with vineyard owners in working with UC Cooperative Extension classes, and it's just great, and we know we can actually have the money to help work with those folks, and so it's a great cooperative effort with Mary Bianchi and Julie Fallon. And by the way, those guys are great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for your comments, and I stand corrected. That was our last request to speak. Close public comment, bring it back to the board, and we will now take a 15-minute break and come back at 11:05. If I can get everyone to take their seats, we'll come back to order. Mr. Cuddy, I always hate to ask you to do this, but anytime you sit in that back chair, I always ask to take the opportunity to close the door because we get so much noise in the hallway that comes right down here. So if you don't mind doing it, keep the same spot. Otherwise, if you don't want to close the door, please move a little closer to us and sit in the front of class. Welcome back again. Supervisor Sajjan, would you like to lead off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll start with a little money and start talking about the real money. It's unfortunately that we can't just write a check for everybody that's in front of us with a need, because every need is as important as the other.
the other side of the formula is such that every time we help a local nonprofit organization or some of the for-profit organizations, in the long run, it does save us the county money, because if you're not doing it, it's going to fall on our laps and we have to deliver those services, maybe even at a higher cost. So let me pick on two, then I'm sure my colleagues will pick a couple others. I want to go to the senior nutrition. It's always a touchy situation because it's not just the meal that they deliver, but that's the only person they get to see. That's their socializing as well as that nutrition they received. And I'm not going to talk about gas with a sense of humor, no, but having served on the regional transportation organization, we know that our budget almost doubled up based on gas prices, and all of us do serve on that committee. Let me start by saying that I'm going to propose, make a motion that we give that additional $6,000 to senior nutrition.
Second. Supervisor Patterson, did you have comments under discussion?
I was going to request to speak after Supervisor Sajjan finished his list.
Okay.
And that's why the light's on. But I assume you're going down.
Just write down
the
list.
Well, take one program at a time.
We take one at a time. It helps the clerk to follow.
True.
So we'll talk about this one.
Just in terms of process, if a supervisor brings up a program, we discuss the issues of that program, and we'll be done with that program at a point when that discussion is done. Is that the thought?
I think what we should start with doing is if you have a burning issue and you want to take a couple of months to start off, and we'll just go right down the list and see what we do. Right now we have a motion and a second, so I'd like to deal with that one first, and then we'll go to the additional discussion.
It'll be clear.
Just a quick, and it's the five of you who have to decide this, just sort of throwing in a thought. If you have a list and you vote yay or nay on each dollar amount, you kind of give the supervisor who jumped in first, being a smart supervisor, the advantage, because you may begin to get buyer's remorse if it's a long list by the end. You may, in fairness to yourselves, you may want to put all of your stuff out there and then decide on the votes. So it's your guys' call. Just thought I'd throw that one
in. Madam Clerk, is there an easier way for you, or does it matter?
I don't care how you do it. When you make your motion, just make them clear.
This is how we have done it in the past, and I think
this is an easy way to do it. We'll just go down the list.
For Madam Clerk to follow our motions, and of course, the monies and the question probably from administration going to be where it's going to come from. It's going to come from the contingencies.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. No further discussion.
Well, there is discussion if this is how we're going to handle it. I was thinking we would just go through the list and create a list and then vote on it. But maybe this, if this is the way we're going to handle it, I would like to comment on this. I'm not going to vote to approve the additional $6,000. They were granted $24,000, and I think that there is an opportunity to save that $6,000 collaborating with some of the other food sources. And I realize their costs have gone up, as has everyone else's, but I do think that there's probably the opportunity to make up that difference elsewhere, and that there are other programs out there that weren't funded that I would like to propose we fund. So I'll vote against this for that reason.
Supervisor Gibson, under discussion. Did you have comments?
And I had similar thoughts to Supervisor Patterson, and that's why I asked the question as to process here, whether we're going to get the big picture, whether we might in our minds decide, what the scale of flexibility we have here. As I recall from talking to staff, the total funds available in this fund center were established by last year, plus the increase in general fund revenue. Is
COLA, I think. CPI. And
well, that was the question. Mr. Edge and I were...
We got policy direction. Nikki can give you the specific number, but a couple of years ago from the board that we would look at the change from 1 year to... The change from 1 year to that better? I'll get it by the end. From 1 year to the next in the growth of the general fund budget. So Nikki, did we do actuals 05, 06 to 06, 07?
Well, actually, we did budget to budget. Okay. We did 05, 06 to 06, 07 budget, and CBOs received almost a 12% increase.
So basically, it would mirror the overall growth in the general fund budget.
So we have rough data. Now, that said, I agree with Supervisor Shajan that many of the things that these fine nonprofits do are extremely good investments for the county. But again, looking at, you know, and to vote no on any of these is any increase to any of these is a hard thing. Let that be put on the record now, and I'll probably repeat it again. And looking at the percentage, senior nutrition is a fantastic program. They are addressing a significant problem, and seeing how they are. At least partially funded and up at least a little bit over the last year, I would agree with Supervisor Patterson.
Okay, see no other lights. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Shajan?
Aye.
Mr. Linthon?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Patterson?
No. Supervisor Shajan, your next item, please.
Next in the order of dollar figures, I guess, we heard from the gentleman talk on the Veterans Museum. It has become a focus point and quite an attraction, quite an honor, and I don't want to, just a way of saying thank you for my citizenship, I was going to award them the amount of money they're requesting.
Who's that?
$29,850 for the Veterans Museum.
$29,850?
Yeah.
Is there a second?
I guess I'm going to be the ogre on this thing. I know we supply the building and we do a bunch of other things on it.
We don't supply the building. It's their building. We supply the management of the building.
That's a matter of interpretation.
Okay.
But I don't think I was going to go the full amount.
What do you have in mind?
I don't have a deal on it, but... it's cross between not doing it and just saying, okay, here's something to get you started and do it. But
you have a percentage in mind?
No, I don't have anything in mind. I have a hard time with a lot of these that have already received increases and stuff.
Bigger?
Because I can tell you it's probably going to, I don't know if it's going to pass.
Okay.
Motion died for a second. Supervisor Sajan, would you like to modify that and say the formula or half? Or
maybe others have a dollar figure or maybe a zero figure. We'll see where it goes.
Supervisor Patterson?
No, again, that's a request to follow Supervisor Sajan when he's done.
Okay.
Okay, I'll take a break after this.
Okay, I'll take a stab at it. I think we can find some middle ground here. And it's $29,200, and I'm going to round that off to half, and I would support giving them $15,000 under the circumstances.
Okay,
if there's a second for that.
Make my second your motion for $15,000.
Any discussion?
And, yes, sir.
Supervisor Gibson.
My thought before that motion came was I appreciate Colonel Jones sending me a packet of information as regards the activities at the museum and where they're headed. It seems to me within the nonprofit world that effort to accumulate capital in getting the museum going at its first point is the key issue. I was going to suggest that we could make contributions out of community project funds toward fundraising efforts that you know, whatever sorts of fundraising efforts that museum would be, and I think that would be my preferred mode of looking at that museum.
We're running out of discretion money without even adding any more new monies to it.
Right, but I would concur with Mr. Gibson. I think, you know, what they're doing is laudable, but I think there are other ways to fundraise, and if we individually want to contribute to our community project funding, we can.
Supervisor Ovitt?
Yeah, we don't have a category called soft money or in-kind contribution. And I looked at more of the fact is because we do maintain and operate that building and there's some other areas, and I don't have a fund that I would say you want to take this other contingency, but I would sure look at in-kind working with these people in terms of their objective as opposed to maybe a straight donation, and that's just a thought. But we don't have a budget unit you could refer to. You're going to refer it to parks. You could refer it to something else. And then look at a funding mechanism of in-kind, but I don't think we have a mechanism to do that.
There's no other discussion. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
That's tentative again, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Okay. Supervisor Shajian, can you take a break? Supervisor Patterson, you're up next.
I was going to go through the list, but I think it's more appropriate, blood orders.
How about we do this? The rule of chair, I'm going to have each supervisor to have two requests, and then we're going to move it on down, so we'll move it back, so no one can monopolize the time or have the advantage of going too far, too fast, too soon.
That's fair.
So to speak. Supervisor Patterson, and then rather than putting your speaker lights on, that way we can, or at least I can, look at the lights and see if there's comments for discussion. We won't have all these lights going on with us, and someone will say, I want to talk next or talk about something else. Supervisor Patterson, your list, please.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Linthal, I actually had four that I was going to rattle off, but I guess
you get two. You pick whatever two you want.
Talk to
you.
My first request would be the first one that we received this morning from Ms. Duncan of the People's Self-Help Housing Program to bring a person on board, a mental health therapist, to help People's Self-Help Housing keep clients in the residences that they manage that have come from the various referral programs. Now, we had this conversation on Monday, and Dr. Baylor was here from Behavior Health, and granted, there are a lot of agencies involved in referring people to residential living. It's just in the case of People's Self-Help Housing, they have set units aside to accommodate these folks, and what's happening is there hasn't been the follow-up assistance these folks need to keep them in that transitional housing. And they have an exceptional program in Santa Barbara County that's working with People's Self-Help, and I know they plan on modeling that program here. And we can jumpstart it with the $25,000 allocation that they're requesting, get somebody on staff to deal with these problems. Otherwise, as Ms. Duncan says, there's going to be people back out on the street who will be encumbering our law enforcement and mental health programs and the rest of them. And so I think it's a good investment to get this program jump-started. And as Dr. Baylor mentioned, they are looking for other grants elsewhere. There is money hopefully coming from the state that will help augment this program in the future. But that is not here and now. And so my recommendation is that we go ahead and fund that request on a one-time basis to get that program jump-started. And I'll make that motion.
A motion on the amount of that, Supervisor Patterson, just for the record.
And I would I want to do this in order to second that. I want to refer it to the mental health budget and that it be looked at within the budget of mental health because they do have homeless coordinators in that. I have to do it because that's the only account I can do it to. If I put it to Mental Health Act, it would require a changing in the programming, which is where it should go and which is what we were trying to do Monday. So refer that to the Mental Health Department, 138 within budget. I'm sorry, budget 161 within budget.
And what your
Supervisor Gibson?
In other words, it would come under service supply of contracting and doing things like that. I don't think I want to support this just to go hire a position on a temporary thing. I think it's a long-term issue. And that's the only thing I can think of. I don't see it coming out of contingencies or something else. I think it needs to come from mental health and mental health issues, or that it needs to be referred to staff to work a program amongst all this homeless stuff that we have that gets it out, gets it done. And but if we're going to make a motion as to where the money comes from, then you know, I'll leave it to Mr. Edge to respond back.
Dr. Edge, can you clarify that?
Let me try. I'll ask a question.
Would you like to ask Ms. Wilcox to go first? She was waiting, and then you can follow up.
If Supervisor Ovitt wants to fund this position from the mental health budget, then essentially you're cutting the tentatively approved mental health expenditure program by $25,000. Conversely, if you want to add it to the mental health budget, then you need to augment the mental health budget by $25,000 from contingency to cover that cost.
Ms. Wilcox, did you want to add also?
On this end, how I interpreted that was that you wanted to refer to the Mental Health Department to see in terms of their consideration of the Mental Health Services Act funding, which I think we heard someday this week they're anticipating more,
right,
on whether they believe that this would be a priority for use of those funds.
And that's what I've been shooting at, is to get this program going, but I didn't want to set a dollar amount today because I think we need to integrate it somehow.
And I
maybe
think
the motion, if the maker of the motion, we refer this to the Mental Health Department through our own administrative staff to get this program organized.
Yeah, and I think Supervisor Patterson, as I understood the motion was, and he referenced, he wanted to separate this particular request from the Prop 63 process, which may or may not generate additional resources in the same area. But yes, certainly, as Gail said, if you simply want to refer it to us at staff level to have mental health look at it as one possibility for subsequent additional Prop 63 funding that we talked about the other day, then that obviously would be a no-cost item at this point.
Yeah, my intent here, after talking with Ms. Duncan, and she did, you know, give a presentation on Monday, this is something that they could put on the ground now through People's Self-Help Housing and coordinate with our mental health services, transitions, the mental health program for the homeless, all of those that are out there now. They would coordinate and make sure that there's some continuity, and this would be the person that could do that. And the intent would be to carry this program forward, but right now there is nothing in our current budget or nothing that we know of coming down from the state to kickstart this thing. And my idea was to fund it one time through this program to get it started. And then it would be up to People's Self-Help to work with our Health and Human Services staff to make it work. And
that was my sense of the motion you were wanting to make, and so if I may be so bold, your motion would be to allocate $25,000 from contingency to People's Self-Help Housing for this program.
Specifically for this program, yes.
I just have my objective is to get the program going this year. It's how you go about doing it. And if you throw $25,000, that's not necessarily what I want, because if you go through mental health, you have these organizations we contract with, which is Transitions, which is all these other programs, and even Jeanette will tell you there are other programs that provide the same kind of housing. What we're looking for is to get some kind of case management, so when we take these people out of this house homeless issue and we put them into some kind of housing, there's somebody following up to make sure that they learn how to live as an individual, self-sufficient, where before they weren't. And that's the essence of the program. And she has one specific case, but I think my issue here is to get this thing as a program and get it going so organizations like People's Self-Help Housing can either contract or provide that. And I don't know that $25,000 may be enough. You may need more coordination or more money or what. That's the issue.
Well, the reason I suggested $25,000 is because that's what they requested, and having experience in Santa Barbara County, they felt they could do that with that amount, and so I'm just taking their lead on the amount, Supervisor Obit.
Supervisor Asajj?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Ms. Duncan, if you had any communications with mental health, if there was some level of working relationship, or if you can come up.
Please step forward. And
I just want to know if there has been any communications between your organization and
we met with Dr.
Duncan, you need to state your name for the record for those listening and watching.
Jeanette Duncan with People's Health. We met with Dr. Baylor right after she was hired, but as you know, the Prop 63 and Mental Health Services Act passed 2 years ago, and they required stakeholders and some sort of guidelines put in place, and so contracts have already been entered into and money obligated for 3 years with existing agencies. But those existing agencies are not the ones who would be providing this service. And I think what we're trying to make you aware of is that we provide the permanent affordable rental housing. But as part of that, we have to make sure that if we're accepting people into those apartments, into those units, that they're able to be on their own and be self-sufficient. And yet when we get referrals from these agencies, we know these people come with a history of chronic homelessness, mental health, drug abuse, alcohol, a lot of different things that have caused them to be homeless or to cause them to have been in the jail system. So we agreed on a demonstration basis to waive our normal criteria to accept these referrals. What we very quickly learned is that that is not enough to accept these referrals. We have to have an in-house person who's involved at the time they apply to do an assessment along with whatever referring agency comes as to whether or not are they in existing services. A lot of people are not in the mental health system when they apply. No. They refuse or for whatever. So until they're a client of mental health can't really intervene. We certainly don't want to duplicate by any means services, but we want to make sure that if we're accepting someone, we know what it is that they need in order to survive in our housing.
Now, the motion is a one-time $25,000. Can you tell us exactly what that $25,000
is going to do? Yes, we have one full-time MSW who's finishing her licensing that's in this county already. This would be put on another part-time person who would work with her and our other clinical staff when we get a referral to assess this person's capacity to put what we call a supportive housing plan together, just like when you're discharged from the hospital, they give you a discharge plan. This is more of an application plan that would lay out what are the services they need, what agencies are out there that can provide those services if they're not already hooked in. So this is a part-time position that would work with our other MSW here in this county to work with these referrals.
And understandably, this is I want to repeat myself as one time. That means if you come back next year, we only give you one time. And what are you going to do to maintain those?
Well, we are going to have to work with mental health and the other providers because, you know, though this is something that the county is going to have to address long term, when you do your 10-year plan to end homelessness, you're going to see a continuum of housing options that have to be there. And we're on the end, the permanent housing providers. And so as part of that, there has to be coordination between all the services that you have now in the county and any future ones. So we're going to have to work with mental health, alcohol and drug, probation. I've already talked to probation and a lot of the other agencies and get them to the table so that they can understand what we need to do.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Supervisor Shajan asked most of my questions, but Ms. Duncan, just one other one. How many clients is this position and program intending to serve?
Well, what we're intending to do is support our MSW now, she had 140 cases she was dealing, which is inordinate. There's no way she can handle that many cases at any one time. Of the 600 affordable units we have in the county and of the 60 more coming online, we expect at any one time that this worker would work with up to 40 households. And so not everyone needs it every day, but at least we would do the initial assessment. And then if there are issues after they move in, to work with them on a case-by-case basis.
And then just to confirm, your long-term plans would be to go back to mental health and through either MHSA or some other program within mental health, establish this on the long-term, similar to other agencies that are already in place with mental health on
that? Yes. In Santa Barbara County, we have what are called MOUs. We have memorandums of understanding with mental health and the shelter programs that we will set aside units for their referrals. But we also are passed through CDBG money, some of the other funding sources that the County of Santa Barbara has to offset our staff time. So our goal would be to make this a permanent program, and this is sort of just a first start in that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have a motion. We have a second. There's no more
discussion. You don't have a second. No, he
second.
Said.
No, my second was based on the fact of referring it to mental health.
I'll second Supervisor Patterson's motion.
Thank you.
Motion by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Gibson. No further discussion. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajan?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. Supervisor Patterson, your second item?
And I wrote one down twice, so I only have three, but I think one of you will.
You still only get two.
I was hoping I could slip it in. But anyway, what I want to do here is a little bit outside of, I think, most of these other programs, but I think it's very worthy of consideration. And that's the children's museums. And what impresses me about it are two things. One, it's for children and their parents. They'll bring their parents along, and hopefully we can re-school the parents. The other is the fact that Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo City/County have really collaborated to coordinate their efforts and make this thing work countywide and roll out. And I know that they have a very ambitious program, and really what the program is to get people into the museums, and especially those in a population that may not go otherwise because they couldn't afford it. And so this is really a scholarship program as well as a public outreach and education on the fact that we've got these children's museums here. And I want to help them roll it out in a very successful way. What I'm going to do is, since it is kind of an ongoing thing in terms of their request to have a year and needing $65,000 to do that, I'm going to recommend that we give them 30, and they might have to reduce the time period at which they allow that free admission, and during that time period perhaps they can get other support from the community organization as more and more people learn about their existence. And so my recommendation is to give, and I want to thank Mr. Mueller, I guess, who has left, and also Rick Minton from the respective museums and the staff and board members that are here for working together and really making the example that we need to work together. So my motion is $30,000 for the children's museums, both Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo combined.
Is that half? Half for Paso, half for San Luis?
I'm going to let them sort that out. I don't want to.
Mr. Seebach, are you going to explain?
They've worked together so far. It's a joint request.
Mr. Seebach, are you going to explain to us some math here?
No, I was hoping you'd indulge me. I have behaved myself pretty good for 2.5 days, I thought. But
I wouldn't go as far as you acted up yesterday.
Here's my comment.
Mr. Seebach, let's not assume facts, not in evidence here.
Jerry Seebach, Auditor Controller, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I just caution you to think very carefully about first-time requests and new programs to fund, even when they say it's going to be once only. I didn't hear them say that in the case of the Children's Museum. They didn't. I don't think they said this was a one-time only. In fact, I expect it will be every year. They're going to want to have the free day once a month, and that they'll come to you next year and want to fund that. For my part, I think that's a terrible idea to have one free day a month. You're going to have all the poor kids there or schools jamming the thing with people, and they won't even be able to get access to the exhibits or anything because it's going to be so crowded with kids running around. And I used to take my kids to the old one. They loved it. But we paid admission, and we supported it. But if it was too crowded, it loses its appeal. So I just think that's a bad idea. But look what you've already had. The Veterans Museum, I think last year was a one-time. Help us get started, and we'll take care of it. So now they're back. The People Self-Help, they'll be back, but they'll be in a different place, maybe. So I'm saying, think about what you're doing. A 12% increase was allocated. That was gobbled up before you guys even got to see it. So we can't really sustain those levels.
Thank you. Ms. Wilcox, did you have your light on?
I actually just wanted to try to talk one more time without on the microphone in the right distance. I love the Children's Museum as well. My kids love the Children's Museum. My only comment was going to be, and maybe Nikki can elaborate, and frankly, I'd probably give it to him because that kid was so darn cute, but we had some discussions at a staff level with them about going to the cities, and the question was, you know, why is the county being approached? And I think that the cities, Nikki, can you address that? And not the cities, when clearly there are children who live in the cities that are going to the museums as much as children from the unincorporated area. And Nick, I don't know what the follow-up to that was.
Well, I did call the San Luis Obispo Children's Museum, who was going to follow up with the Paso Robles Museum, and I never got any of the information back. Our concern was that this is a county-wide. The children's museums do affect all the counties, and nowhere in their application did they have any kind of collaboration with any of the cities or any other nonprofit organization or any of the school districts or any of it. So I met with all of you and explained that. The one day a month, we felt we could volunteer that out of your district community project funds. But that's where our recommendation came from, is that we didn't feel that it was 100% the county's responsibility to launch the Children's Museum.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson.
I appreciate Ms. Schmidt's comments on this. I guess a couple of things come to mind. One of them is, first of all, the overall amount here struck me as significant, and I'll echo Ms. Wilcox. It's been a while since I've been in the Children's Museum, but when my boys were of that age, it was a favorite destination, and I have nothing but wonderful memories and great expectations for certainly the one that I've seen here in San Luis Obispo. I guess in terms of directing resources toward admissions, it's much more my thought to see if we couldn't provide resources to those who wouldn't otherwise be able to get into the museum. And so in terms of evaluating this request, it was much more my thought to say, geez, if I had seen this is a program to get underprivileged kids in some sense, free lunch, you know, however we wanted to do the needs test on that, I think that that's a tremendous opportunity that we can provide to a segment of our residents, because I do know that there are families in this county that are capable of doing the admission, and I don't know exactly where the admission amounts fall. But I thought, as we've been thinking about this and trying to maintain the global perspective, I feel the need to be consistent with the Veterans Museum as well in terms of efforts being, resources being directed to them. I tend to think this does fit more into the zone of community projects based on, again, in my mind, help toward those who would need to do it. And I would certainly be supportive of funds going in that direction from my own funds.
I was asking Mr. Patterson again, you know, if you're going to do the $30,000, we can make it a one-time issue. I mean, it for this particular program. But Mr. Seebeck, I got a funny feeling they're going to come back in other different things, like specific projects or specific areas inside the buildings, you know, which they're going to have individual donations, and those can be taken care of, I think, in some of our discretionary funds. But I would second it if we would go ahead and split it half, Paso and San Luis, and qualify it as a one-time contribution for scholarships for children to get in.
Motion maker want to amend his motion on that?
Yeah, I'll accept that.
Second.
Supervisor Sajjan?
I was just going to comment that makes it easier for the group to come together and say, this is the way they directed it, this is how we're going to spend it.
You said a one-time only for scholarships? Is that what you said? Or just no?
Well, I'm going along with what Bruce said, and I've done this before with other organizations where you provide monies so that those that can't get in basically have the capability of finding a scholarship to get in. Now, if they want to provide free day, however they use that scholarship is up to them. But I'd rather call it a scholarship than actually that we're providing free entry or something. However they want to do it. I'm not.
Is that the motion maker?
If you want to take the scholarship off, that's fine. I was just trying to...
If I might, Supervisor Patterson, would you rephrase your motion so we can have some clearness here?
Well, it's been amended.
Correct.
Actually, now to... there's a discussion about the amendment. And
correct.
My motion was to appropriate on a one-time basis $30,000 to the children's museums for the purpose of their grand opening rollout campaign, which was to include the free admission. And we've talked about now that free admission being tied in some way to a scholarship or based on a need criteria.
And just so the chair is clear, has there been a second on that first motion, or was it...
No, Supervisor Ovitz seconded the motion with Supervisor Patterson's concurrence that it would be the $30,000, with half of it going to San Luis Obispo and half going to Paso Robles, and then Harry added some qualifiers on what that would be.
Be a one-time and...
And that it would be a one-time, yeah.
Be used as a scholarship.
So, and I understood that the motion maker agreed to that. So what I was clarifying was, did it mean a scholarship, or did it mean it's for this rollout campaign, period?
Mine was not so much for the rollout as it was an ability to get people in, children in, or those that can get in.
Well, my intent was to give them a little bit more flexibility on how they...
Take the word scholarship.
So could it just be the $30,000 half for each?
Yeah.
One time only?
That's good, yeah.
Okay.
Madam Clerk, would you just reread the motion one more time when you get it finalized?
I think I have it finalized at this point. They are providing $30,000 to both the San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles Children's Museums, half to each, and it's one-time funding, period, from general fund contingencies.
Okay. Under discussion, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schmidt, in the application here, was there a number of children to be served with the possibility of these funds? And while she's coming forward, it's probably time to reiterate that all these decisions are hard, that I'm trying to make them in terms of some consistency and an eye toward a budget year next year that might not be quite so...
Welcome to our world.
Yeah. Now, I understand the furrowed brow at this point.
The application refers to guests, does not refer to whether they're children or not. So it's 200 guests per day in San Luis and 130 guests per day in Paso Robles. And then other outcomes.
Okay. I appreciate it. I don't know. Do we have a motion clarified at this point and seconded at this
correct.
Point? Again, with great reluctance for matters of consistency, I won't support this version of it. What I'd like to see is the children's museums work with entities such as First Five to identify children and their families who could be targeted for the application of these resources, so we can use it for the kids who I think are most in need of it.
Supervisor Asagio.
Thank you. Just to follow up Mr. Gibson's suggestion on First Five, that was my suggestion when I met with the organization, but that can only serve children up to 5 years old. And I was hoping that whatever money we give is to finish a project so then it's available and you have the Rotarians and the Lions and all that to help the kids to come through. But with the spirits of the forward moving, I'll go ahead and support this.
Thank you. Seeing no other lights. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye. Mr. Gibson, you had your light on next, so you'll get your two items.
Yes, I would like to move forward. Focusing on children here. I'd like to pick up the YMCA's request to fund the teen center and after school activities in Cambria, in a manner similar to those that are funded in Shandon and San Miguel, and I believe Ms. Rimes brought forward the information that I knew intuitively that in large part due to a significant Hispanic community that are members of families working service jobs in Cambria, sort of a little scene community, given the sort of what you see when you drive through Cambria casually. I think this program has some substantial merit in terms of providing youth activities that will have a number of beneficial effects. Again, the demographics, the need in terms of children's and families who are in lower income levels are very similar to Shannon and San Miguel, and so I would move that the funding to the YMCA be increased to $15,000 to provide five for similar teen center programs in Cambria.
Is there a second?
Increase of five
to $15,000 from contingencies.
Supervisor Patterson, is that a second or a question?
A question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for Nikki. The Y request, was it specifically for those two programs, Shandon and San Miguel, or was that for just general operating? I don't think that Shandon and San Miguel were necessarily funded through the grant from this board. I think that was those are programs that the Y operates and that the Y request, and I believe that was, if I can track it down again, was for $46,000 just for general operations, and they were granted 10. Could you give us some clarification on that?
Nikki Schmidt, County Administrator. Administration. Sorry.
Hey, you're promoting me looking.
Well, he does have a pretty nice office.
Except she makes a lot less. Dr. Edge, you can leave the room now.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
Ambitions are wonderful things.
Well, anyway. The request for $46,000 included Shannon, San Miguel, Cambria, Atascadero, and Pismo Beach for their programs in each one of those communities. And the committee funded $10,000 for Shannon and San Miguel like they did last year. So
I see.
The 46 was for five different programs.
Okay, and you recommended funding for the two specifically?
Yes.
Okay, and the Y knows that?
Yes.
Okay. And Nikki, excuse me, before you run off, that decision was based on what? Why those two and not the others?
They had good results for those areas, because they'd been funded in the past. The committee spent a lot of time on the YMCA talking about the programs.
To answer your question, I know the answer for Atascadero. They don't have their program up and running yet, so that would be
right.
An easy answer.
The results weren't all that good that they provided for Cambria. Obviously, they had better results for Shannon and San Miguel because they've been out there, and that's where the committee went. They spent a lot of time discussing the YMCA.
San Miguel and Shannon had basically raised more than this match, considerably amount more. San Miguel actually, I don't know if this is the end of the third year or not, raised enough to contract with YMCA for 3 years from the community itself without asking for help from the county.
And similarly, in Cambria, we have a representative of the Lions Club who can speak to the support that the community gives to this project. I mean, we're looking at a disadvantaged population that's also remote. So I think the parallels there are substantial.
I'm just going to just keep things going. I'm going to go ahead and support the $5,000 to the YMC for Cambria, because if I didn't do it here, I would have said I would have committed $1,000 out of my community project funds. But everybody's whining about their any project funds, so.
We're talking facts, not wine.
I'll second the motion. $5,000 is earmarked for Cambria.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. See, you know, the light's on for discussion. I don't think you'd appreciate you coming down, but thank you. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please?
Yeah.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. And the other one that I wanted to bring up was the Children's Health Initiative. Again, I didn't quite understand the request there. She's fine with staff recommendation. Okay, so then.
What I would also like to do on that is to refer that to staff to work with the CHCN, CHI in terms of the people we need to either get on insurance or not, because it's a break even either way.
Okay.
So that doesn't just die, but it's a continuing working situation.
All right, and in other words, my other issues have been covered. So
thank you. Supervisor Robert, you're up next.
I have no others.
I went to my turn. Don't jump the gun. I have two issues. One, obviously, is something that's near and dear to me, is the hotline issue. I think we heard not only some compelling testimony today of perhaps reasons why the justification wasn't adequate, where additional information would have probably risen to a level where county staff would have applied full funding for this. It's in our budget document. It's one of the things that worked with the Sheriff's Department, that this additional funding is going to lessen the workload of dispatch. Have we not get this or we're not able to do this, we'll be hiring a dispatcher. By the time you get salary benefits and things like that, they'll be much more expensive. This is the future. This is one-time startup cost money. We're working with the state and federal legislation, similar to what 911 was about 37 years ago, to have this be a small portion of everyone's cell phone or telephone bill. That next time you pay your phone bill, look at it. I think residential service pays about 28 cents per household to supplement 911 at the state level. It's a great program. I can't say enough good things about it. Obviously, I'm biased from my law enforcement perspective, and I request they receive the full amount of funding. They asked for 50 and got 20, so we increased that $30,000 from contingencies, and that would be my tentative motion. Yes. And I might add, too, that since the time that this started through the staff process, that Hotline and 211 is doing things to reduce expenses, economy of scale. They'll have one executive director. They're streamlining. They're doing all the things that we want to in nonprofits, whether we're trying to find more efficiencies. And I just can't say enough. I think this is a great program, and this benefits everybody. And especially, I hope we don't have to use it in time of a disaster, but it is a key component to our disaster preparedness.
Go ahead, second that.
Any discussion? Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I got out of the conversation with Hotline and its supporters this morning, including 211, is that the request for the funding, the $50,000 for 211 specifically, was to really roll out that program and get it up and going. And they made an additional request for $30,000 that this morning that wasn't applied for because of a mix-up, I guess, or a staffing issue. I think it's important to fund that, and my feeling is that the funding for 211 is somewhat flexible because, really, the way I heard it, it's a promotional program to get that up and running and educate the community about using it, and they have another 5 months to get that revenue together, but what they don't have is the operational money for a hotline, and I would be supportive of the $30,000 for hotline, but not at this point an augmentation for 211.
Well, having said on the committee, there's a lot of information here. One of the things that we need to do is, whether it's for rollout money, whether it's for high-tech equipment, one of the things we need to do is ensure that we have an adequate budget to fund this and start this up. And you can say, well, you're going to have less money for training or rollout or less money for equipment. They have a budget. They prepared the budget. It was a real tight budget. Mm-hmm. We're getting matching funds. The original request was for $50,000. And so I think it's important, and this is money well spent. It is a little bit different than Hotline, and I was going to move on to that as my second item. But we have a motion and a second. So under discussion, Supervisor Gibson.
Yes, I guess I'm a little confused about where we are on 211. Let's pick it up as 211 right now. Is there yet capital costs that need to be incurred to make that happen?
Yes.
So my question is, it leads both ways. You had quoted at the time they were testifying that the sheriff stands to benefit from the, you know, the 911 system stands to benefit from the establishment of 211. So I'm wondering if there isn't some funds in capital improvement within the sheriff's department that could be directed toward making that happen.
Ms. Wilcox?
It's a different function.
What? Yeah, the we've been told that something that 40 to 50% or more of the calls going into 911 are not true emergencies, some of them literally asking for directions or phone numbers to literally, you know, Mark's Plumbing or whatever. Didn't mean to give any credit to Mark's Plumbing, but I don't know. If you're talking about capital funds, there's no capital funds. If you're talking about whether we can reduce dispatchers, I mean, there's a significant amount of workload. I don't know if it will stop going in there, but we can certainly ask the sheriff. I doubt that he's going to be willing to give up dispatchers. They did not make a justification for adding a dispatcher regardless of whether, you know, 211 comes on board. The only other comment I have is that I'm not sure, I haven't been involved in the committee for a while, what the status is of the cities in terms of funding. And I keep bringing up the cities because, in part, I'm jealous that four of them, so four or five, are getting all that sales tax money now. And now would be the time to, whether it's Children's Museum, that's why I brought it up on the Children's Museum, because they certainly have a lot of additional money now. But in the other entities that have implemented 211, cities, and most of them have played not a major role in funding, but they have participated. And I do think it's important that we at least ask when they have additional money coming in for their participation.
And Ms. Wilcox, if I understood you correctly, you said the Sheriff's Department didn't request an additional dispatch position. And I'm looking at page B94. In the bottom paragraph, it says, this department also requests one full-time equivalent sheriff's dispatch position. However, the dispatch position is not recommended at this time, as the county is working with local agencies and organizations to implement non-emergency 211.
Yeah, I'm sorry, let me clarify. They did request, but the justification, there was no justification provided that we would have recommended regardless, that they didn't have compelling results with their request.
Supervisor Robert?
I have a question, Nikki. The application you had for $50,000 was for what? Because it was mentioned in public testimony that they had not actually applied for the 211, clerically speaking. And I can go back in history, and this is before Carl, when Food Bank did not apply and we did not give them the money that 1 year. Now, they did come back in subsequent years. But what's this $50,000 for here?
Hotline submitted an application for the 211 program for $50,000 for launch expenses to launch and market 211. The committee in deliberations, again, spent a lot of time on it. Two things became clear. That hotline did not submit an application or did not include their core program within their application. It was strictly for 211, strictly for the launch market. The committee, in discussing it, felt that 211, again, was a countywide service, and that the county should not be responsible 100% for the launching of it. They also, DSS at the time, I don't know that if it went through, had $42,000 in their budget for the 211, and at the time, Public Health had $5,000. This is what I was told from Evan. I don't know if that money went through. So.
Supervisor Gibson?
I would yield to Supervisor Patterson, who seemed to have a question on the tip of his tongue there.
Supervisor Patterson?
There somewhere. Thank you, Supervisor.
Scared him. Yeah.
Nikki, do you, in talking with the applicant, do you know what efforts they've made to actually seek funding from the other jurisdictions, the other cities? I have to assume that they've done that, and I appreciate the fact that the committee recognized that this is a countywide service, and there ought to be other funders for this service besides just the county. And I'm curious to know if that's already been factored into their request.
I want to say something as an aside. As an aside, every year I bring up all this stack of paperwork to be able to answer the question, and I really appreciate being able to use it this year.
We appreciate the fact that you are doing it and hope you continue to do it, Mr. Ed.
That's the new county.
The budget that was provided with the application included, it just said other county, city income sources. It didn't appear that these had been attained yet for $125,000. And that is when I talked to Evan, that's when the DSS money, the public health, she said that at the time they thought they were going to get $10,000 from the city of SLO. And I don't know if that came for. They had applied for $10,000. So
the $20,000 here is then towards the promotion and movement of the 211.
Yes.
Okay.
And if I may, and I don't want to speak for them and have a lot of public comment, but the city of San Luis Obispo did, in their original budget hearings, authorize five of that $10,000 request, and they're having the same thing we're doing tonight. And my understanding is they're going to go back for that additional $5,000. And other cities are coming on board. I don't know the exact amounts, but it is a work in progress from that $125,000 over our budget to get city contributions. Supervisor Gibson.
One more thing. Would you repeat for me? You said that DSS had put in an amount of money in their budget.
Well, that's what I was told at the time that I talked to Evan, about $42,000.
And public health had only about five.
Let me read my notes. It says $42,000 DSS to fund after hours, and then $5,000 from public health for bioterrorism information.
Mr. Chairman, if I could clarify, there wasn't additional money, Nick. I think what they were saying is because they currently have money in their budget, social services for after-hours coverage, that they could stop spending that money on whoever's doing it now and redirect it. So it wasn't additional money. They would redirect it.
No, what I'm saying is we budgeted in this budget by passing those temporary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Supervisor Gibson, did you want to go in for staff?
Yeah, I'm still confused, which doesn't distinguish this day from any other one, but I was given to understand.
Next time?
Pardon?
Can I quote that next time?
Yeah, it's 3 days with a tie around my neck. I think that's the problem. I'm not used to that.
I got to drive again.
What I was given to understand was that there were still some capital costs involved in getting 211 set up and going. Is that true? Is there equipment to buy? Things to do?
Yes.
And Chairman Lenthal says yes.
I was just going to say that that's not an issue that the committee or this application dealt with, was any kind of capital cost.
Okay, but is Hotline on the hook for those? I mean, who's responsible for those capital costs?
Right now, Hotline and 211 are one together.
Right.
And they formed a budget, identified which were going to be capital costs, which were going to be marketing, which could be rollout. So basically, they're on the hook.
Right.
That's what the overall budget came from, the $125,000, and I didn't do my math, but it was 45 from DSS, another five here, and the rest from the cities. A portion came from each one of those agencies, and that's how they put their overall budget to say, this is what it's going to take to roll this out.
Okay. My question is, do we not have capital reserves someplace for the improvement of our basic communications infrastructure, whether it's automation or wherever, that we could use for those capital costs that would free their budget up to do the rollout without this money going in?
Sure. You can take it from wherever you want. I mean, you could take it from capital project reserves. You can take it from general fund contingencies. But either way, it's discretionary funding to the county.
Right.
I think the motion needs to be changed to capital improvement, because the $20,000 that we have here would be predominantly promotional monies, as the application was, because there is no application for capital.
Right. So my thought was that if we need to get this going and we wanted to allocate another $30,000, let's go to one of the appropriate capital reserve account and find that $30,000 there.
Dr. Edge, I know you...
It's, as Gail said, it's sort of six of one, half dozen of the other. You'd just be taking it from a reserve. You'd cancel that reserve and you'd give it as a sum of money to Hotline for the 211 purpose. The fact that it's a capital reserve is really neither here nor there. It's $30,000 more that they'll have and less that you'll have.
Right, but those reserves are established for this kind of purpose. I mean,
I was trying to steer you away from that. It's a capital improvement reserve for county capital improvement processes. you've got some legal issues, some accounting issues. If you're saying, okay, we're going to, if we give it to them or we allocate it as a capital improvement reserve, and you're getting into issues of all of the prevailing wage public policy project rules. But in other words, we'd have to build it, we'd have to charge, make sure that prevailing wage rates were built.
Purchase equipment.
Yeah, I guess without getting into it and without asking Jerry to get into it, the easiest thing for you guys to do, if you are inclined to give them the money, is just say, we'll give them $30,000 and take it from wherever you want to take it, but don't designate it as a capital project per se.
Yeah, Mr. Seabach, does that meet the auditor's muster?
I think I agree with Mr. Edge.
You
can say this is for startup costs, but if you say we're earmarking it for some equipment purchases or something, then there has been some problems with legal ownership of that equipment. What if they go out of business, they have to sign it over to us or something, and it gets to be a...
Mr. Seabach, you still have to state your name.
Jerry Seabach, Auditor Controller.
Thank you.
Citizen of Atascadero. 40-some years.
Supervisor Patterson.
This is not a paid political advertisement.
I don't know how to respond to that exactly. I've only lived in Atascadero for 30, so got me, Jerry.
60,
so what we have before us is a request from Hotline for rollout money in the amount of $50,000 for 211. And our review committee has recommended $20,000. Now, it's my understanding from what I heard this morning from representatives of Hotline /211 is that that money was for the promotion of the program and to educate county citizens about the program. It doesn't say anything about buying equipment. And personally, I think what I would do in this case, they also, members of Hotline, past and present, said that they, for a whatever reason, didn't get their application in for their operating funds to continue operating the Hotline program. My preference is to allocate the $20,000 for the 211 rollout as recommended by the review committee and grant $30,000 for the continued operation of Hotline until they roll out 211 and merge. And that's how I would like to see it structured. I don't want to just give them $50,000 for 211 thinking that they need equipment or whatever else because that's not what they asked for. And they've got, it was mentioned that they have a matching grant from PG&E, I believe, for that rollout. And so whatever we get them, up to $25,000. So that's going to be matched by PG&E. So I think there's revenue there to roll out 211. If it takes them an extra month or two, that's okay in my book. But I think we need to take a serious look at how Hotline's going to continue to operate in the interim for the next 6 months while they merge the program. So
thank
that's
you.
Where I'm coming from.
And if I may, I don't think that's an accurate reflection because there isn't enough money to roll this out, even with the matching funds. That's why we had an original budget come together with the understanding we were going to get matching funds from PG&E. Sheriff's Advisory Council gave $25,000. I donated $25,000. So there isn't enough money there if we don't do that. So that's a misnomer. The matching component is part and parcel to this original budget. So I think if we're going to do this, we have to understand that we need to give them the money that they originally requested for. And it's money that's needed to make this happen. Supervisor Robert?
There's one other way, if we want to get other matching funds brought in, and we did this with the Housing Trust Fund. We said we can set aside X number of dollars, and it will be doled out as it's matched. But I gotta say my first run at this is that I think the $20,000 for rollout is our contribution. We have other contributions from the county that are going to be operational-wise. And I think that's where we need to be. And if we want to discuss on a separate motion operations that they didn't apply for, I think that's going to have to come back in another form. We can do the same motion or whatever, but I'm saying is that they did not make the application. And we have a whole bunch of people out there that went to the work, got it done, and we've cut them back. So it's not fair that we turn around all of a sudden and say, you know, you forgot, and we'll be nice to you. So, but I think the $20,000 would be our contribution towards a rollout.
Dr. Edge.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Supervisor Overt outlined it. I believe you were after you dealt with this one, you were going to raise the additional hotline request. I think that's where you're mixing and matching. Essentially, as I understood it, hotline today came in, and if they what they would like, if they if they were the board, they would like $60,000 in total, an additional $30,000 for full funding of their 211 request, plus $30,000 for their core hotline process, and you're kind of mixing and matching. Perhaps you could deal with it as a $60,000 item, or as Supervisor Overt suggests, vote up and down on the 211 item, knowing that you'll then get to vote up and down on the core hotline.
Well, I separated them specifically because being involved with the 211 steering committee, that I wanted to make sure people understand that it's important that we need this money to implement and make this happen. And it's separate from someone not getting a request in on time, and that was going to be another item for a vote that I was going to bring. So I agree. I don't want to confuse the two, but I think it's important to understand they created a budget. They have a process. There was a tremendous amount of matching funds from the private sector, from volunteer organizations, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. And this is literally a one-time cost because we're trying to do something here that is going to bring us in line with the other 14 counties in California that have this. Our neighboring counties in Santa Barbara and Ventura have already rolled this out, and it's a good step to go in the right direction. And I think we should not try to shortchange ourselves and say that we can do this or put it off for a couple more months and see if we can get some more money from the private sector. They had a business plan. It was a very good business plan. They have their numbers. They came in with a request, and basically they need $30,000 to make this happen. Supervisor Patterson?
I thought they needed 50.
$30,000 additional dollars to make this happen.
Okay.
Supervisor Patterson? Supervisor Gibson?
Would the motion maker be interested in a reduced amount? I mean, I was looking at PG&E matching to $25,000. If we put in $25,000 to match that, that is a small increment over what they got, but it has a certain sense to me at this point.
Well, personally, I'd like to stand with the motion that I made because they had a budget. And the whole purpose of having a budget is to have your startup costs and have things fully identified and articulated. They did that with respect to 211, and the matching program with PG&E was up to $25,000 with some other issues. Like anything that starts off, we had some additional startup costs that weren't originally anticipated. The Sheriff's Advisory Council just last month wrote a check for $25,000 to cover those. So we have all our bases covered if we can address this. So I would like to stay with my original motion if the second agrees.
Follow-up question.
Okay. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
No.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Thank you. My second item is now with Hotline, and I'm sensitive to the fact that people come through and go through a process. But I think like anything in life, there's exigent circumstances and things that happen that we have to address. It was unfortunate that there was a personnel issue that did not allow the people on the board to know that this application did not get sent to the county. Hotline has been funded by the county for several years. They provide a tremendous service. There's over 12,000 calls that they do from everything from mental health to social services, things of that nature, from suicide prevention. It's a critical component of our overall safety net for this county, and I'm at the mercy of my colleagues. I'm certainly not saying that they can walk in at the 11th hour and get their full request, but we need to really look at how we can make this organization whole because of basically a gap in their funding for their basic core operations, and they've asked for $30,000, and I'll start with that as a motion, and if that can't pass, I'll see if I can get some support from my colleagues, but it's a key component. It's unfortunate that we're here talking about this at this hour, that our admin staff did not get the proper documentation. They have a tremendous track record of being funded for over 20 years, and I would request that they get their $30,000 funding. That would be my motion.
In pondering whether to second, what was their funding last year?
Nikki, can you help me? I don't have the piece of paper.
$32,000,
so they're actually asking for less. But basically, when I had the meeting with these people, they said, we need $30,000 to put our key in the door and stay afloat. So they're not asking as much as they had before. There was no COLA increase. Like I say, it's very unfortunate that we are having this conversation today. But the reasons that we're there were because of some personnel issues. And so I want to see the organization succeed and continue to do well and not die because some person didn't get their job or put their application in on time. Supervisor Gibson?
I'll second the motion.
Supervisor Ovett?
I'm just going to be hardline. I'm not going to support the motion because you just gave them $30,000, and they're going to have to make a decision on whether to continue with 211 or keep the business going as is. And the reason I say that, there's a number of other organizations that have been out here in the last number of years. Senior Nutrition was one of them. That we went back in, and we gave them some money, but they got on their case on their own and raised the money, and you asked Shirley Bianchi the exerted effort that was put together to keep that afloat. I know other organizations that have had to make a decision as to where they're going to go, and the issue is if I had to make a choice between the $30,000 that you were talking about before, I would have put it in operating and not in a new program that we don't have off the ground yet, and I can't support this $30,000 here.
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Question. We heard today that Hotline and 211 will merge, and that's scheduled to occur in November. And this is full funding. Last year they asked for $32,000 for the full year, the full fiscal year. And I'm wondering if they're planning on merging with 211, if there's other revenue. We just approved a full $50,000 for 211. If we can reduce the amount to fund the operations of Hotline, knowing that they're going to merge with this other program in 6 months. So I'm wondering if a half allocation would get them to that point where they're part of the 211 program.
And if I may, I'm probably the best position here to answer the question. There certainly is economy as a scale here. In a future budget, you'll find any time you eliminate an executive director position or admin costs and things of that nature, you're going to save money. Hotline basically needs $30,000 to stay afloat for this next fiscal year. Perhaps next year, with some consolidation of things, with 211 rolling out, that they can even reduce what they're asking for the county to supplement. They do bowl-a-thons, they do fundraising organizations, things to stay afloat. They have tremendous support from the community. And my recommendation would be still that we give them this $30,000 this year, and with the hope and understanding that they're going to have some economies of scales and be more efficient. And I'm confident that they will come back next year and ask for less than $30,000, but I don't know what that'll be until we see this operation come into place. Supervisor Asajj.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hear what Mr. Ovett talking about the senior nutrition. Some of us got out of our position to do the fundraising required to keep them in business. And some years ago, Ms. Bianchi and myself reached deep in our discretionary funds to get the Hotline going as well. My thinking when we were first introduced to 1-1 such that because of Hotline, this will be an easier site to bring to, because Hotline exists, and that's pretty much what they do. That's the business they're in, and be a good marriage, if I may use that, or a working relationship. And looking forward to see where we're going to go with this, as far as would 211 become the Hotline, or the Hotline becomes 211, which is of the same. And for one other year, because I know the tremendous effort that boards have taken the responsibility in the absence of an executive director, but I can't make that excuse for ongoing basis, and I think I'll think about it this year as for the sake of 211, but if this will be the case in the future years, then I won't be able to support it, even though they do such a tremendous work in our community. The amount of relief because of the Hotline, even without the 211, helps a lot of calls to be rerouted from 911. The work is there, the quality is there, the need is there. I think we just need to have a little boost in the organizational part of it, and we don't have to ask all those questions and just keep them moving forward.
Ms. Wilcox, do you have your staff light on?
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know if they even have their operational budget ready. I mean, they're looking at startup, but I don't think it would be reasonable to assume that they're not going to ask for the same or more money in the future from the county, because their operational costs are going to increase significantly under 211. That's the way it's happened in other counties who have rolled it out, and that's why I keep harping on the cities and other entities. Their costs are going to increase significantly. So I unless I'm missing something, don't be thinking they're not going to come back for continued ongoing support.
I wasn't suggesting they were going to come back, but like with 911 when it started, once we get past the startup cost and there's going to be some state money, federal money available, that will be applied, that will be a contribution margin that will reduce hotlines, admin expenses, cost of doing business, paying for some of their labor. You have one executive director, if they said a third of their time is working with 211, they could charge that time back to whatever that program provides, that it will reduce their overall operating expenses. And I think that's what we've seen in other counties and other parts of the country. The difficulty we're having right now is California has not moved forward, from my perspective, enough to have this a statewide mandate. Once we get this online, there's a movement that I think within 2 or 3 years we won't be having this conversation, because it'll be similar to what we saw 37 years ago with 911 on pilot programs in the state. And the PUC got together and said it's going to cost us this much to do it. Everyone that had a cell phone now is going to pay a certain fee, just like you paid if you had a business or a residential phone service line. So I disagree. I don't think this is going to be an ongoing and an increase in expense in the future. Supervisor Sajjan.
Supervisor, I thought that's what your comments were, that there wouldn't be requests for ongoing funding in the future.
No, I didn't mean to want to be requested. My ongoing support somehow is going to diminish because of, after several of unsuccessful attaining an executive director, it just doesn't give the reflection that they deserve to have, because all of us work with numerous organizations, and the focal point is that executive director, regardless how good the board members are, if you don't have that staff that is the nucleus of any given organization, it's not a good reflection. It's that's where I'm tempted to go either way, and on a positive way, maybe a final chance to say you're either able to hold it together as an organization, and this is your last chance for me to accept what's in front of us here today.
All I'm trying to say is I think it would be unfair to Hotline. I just have never gotten the impression that they were thinking of decreasing their annual request for support from the county, and I just, that's my only comment.
Yeah, no, and what I meant, again, what I said is because of the absence of the application, based on not having an executive director in position, who is the maker or breaker of an organization overall.
Okay. There's no further discussion. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
You don't have a second.
Supervisor Gibson seconded.
Oh, you seconded it? Thank you.
Motion by myself and seconded by Supervisor Gibson. A roll call, please.
Mr. Linthom?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
No.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Those are my two. If we'll move on down, Supervisor Patterson, you said you had another item?
No, I was going to move to approve the budget as amended.
Supervisor Gibson, do you have one more? Okay. I actually had a last one then. We've spent a lot of time talking about our community project funds, and they seem to be a stopgap or a safety net or a catch-all for everything. And while I appreciate having a 4.1% CPI carryover that raises it from $25,000 to $26,000 or $26,038, as things get tight and with this economic cloud being out there for more demand for our services, I think that we really see tremendous value with our community project funds in our districts collectively, independently. And I would make a motion that we increase that by $5,000 this next budget year.
What total?
That would be $30,000 from $25,000. So eliminate the CPI of whatever it was, $1,038, and go back to our original $25,000 and increase that to $30,000.
I'll second it for discussion.
Okay. Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, I just think it's kind of a hard thing when you sit here and tell all these other people you're going to give them half the money or not the money or something else, and you pick and choose, and then all of a sudden you want to add yourself some more money.
Give it to
I'm just saying I don't see the need for it.
The answer is we're not giving ourselves more money. We're providing more revenue for special projects.
You call it what you want, and I'm just saying I don't see the need for it, because you can administer the monies that you have in any amount of way you can, and by adding more money doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it any better.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. There's certainly no end to the good that we can do with that money, but at the same time, I think that we need to use some discretion. What I've done is I've put my cost of living increase in my community project funds since I've been on the board, and that gives me a few thousand dollars more each year to give to the community. And I think that the committee's recommendation that we increase it simply by the CPI is adequate, and I would support that, but no more than that.
Supervisor Gibson, did you have your light on or take it off?
I had it on, but I concur with the previous two speakers is the short way of saying what I was going to say.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
My oratory clearly is my oratory is losing it here. No, I concur with the previous two speakers. Was my comment.
Sounds like
directly
business.
Related to the not.
Round. Yeah, it, get me out of this thing. That's
sounds to me like there's no support or the handwriting's on the wall. So I'll withdraw my motion.
You're not going to call for a vote.
You had a second.
You have a second. You need to call. You.
He's withdrawing his motion.
Withdrawing it. Okay.
I would move then for the approval of the community-based fund as amended.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, seconded by Supervisor Sajjan. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
I'm sorry, aye. I'm in my car and on the road north, man. I'm
Mr.
Shajian, not even here.
Mr. Sajjan? Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
I need a motion to continue this hearing to the 26th.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Ovitt, Motion by Supervisor Sajjan, second by Supervisor Ovitt. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries unanimously. We'll see you next week. Next Tuesday.
I said Monday.
You too. I'll try not to.
Well, you know, I want to tell you,